Everyone's still online? Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
My WordPad crashed. Let's just do it.
Welcome to the 9th episode of the Negative World Podcast, a podcast where a bunch of Nintendo nerds discuss video games. And that's all it is, really. We're not exactly in the industry or anything. We're just people who love to talk a little bit too much about video games. And for some reason, you're listening to us. Cool. All right, we're recording this on Saturday, the 14th of May. I am the host, Guillaume, for better or worse. And with me today, I am
the parasite, Anand. And my topic is going to be about Project Cafe. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the possibilities that it's going to bring to gaming. And I don't think it's been discussed very much, like the precise things that it can enable. And I was informed on the last podcast that I sounded like a woman. So I'm going to do the whole rest of the podcast like Barry White. Oh, yeah.
And this is Chris Wright. I'm the noob. And I'm going to be talking about pinball. Isn't pinball cool? What's the relationship between pinball and video games, and where's that relationship today? And could pinball ever be relevant again to the modern gamer? We'll talk about the decline of arcades and how that's affected both the video game industry and the pinball industry. And hopefully we'll just get a chance to talk about some of our favorite pinball tables, and both on at arcades and on home consoles.
So you're a noob, but still an old man with the pinball talk.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting contrast. Okay.
All right, my own topic is going to be atonement. No, wait. it's going to be, yeah, I feel kind of bad for talking shit about video games last time.
Seriously.
And, yeah, so my topic is going to be about the positive aspects of video games, or, you know, anecdotes about, like, the positive stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's hope we can keep it positive. We're also janitors.
Well, I'll try my best anyway. All right. So who wanted to go first?
You want to go first, man? Anon?
Sure. Okay. My topic is Project Cafe, and that's the new Nintendo console, in case you didn't know. And I think it's a code name as of now. It might be called Stream, or it might be called Project Cafe, or it might be called Wii 2, or I don't know, whatever. It might be called some other random three letters. And I wanted to talk about the kind of new things it can enable. You know, so the features of the leaked features of the console so far are that the controller is going to be kind of non-standard. Each controller is, at least one of the controllers, but probably each controller is going to have a touch screen, and like a 6-inch touch screen. And, you know, I suppose that it's supposed to be backwards compatible with the Wii, which I don't really know how that's going to work from a form factor, having a touchscreen on your controller, but let's not talk about that right now. let's just save that discussion for some other time, or when we actually see it revealed, at which time this whole topic will be totally useless. And anyway, so each controller is going to have a screen, and the console itself will be able to stream content to the controllers. And, you know, the first time I heard about it, I thought, like, I couldn't really think of any good uses for it. But now that I think more about it, I think there are some pretty interesting uses for it. And even just starting with the name Project Cafe, like, a lot of people are talking about the online presence of the console, because they're saying that, you know, there's some rumors and stuff that Nintendo is really going to, like, really going to push online with this console, and you can be on local and then just connect online seamlessly or something. But I think the cafe name and just the whole concept kind of lends itself more to local multiplayer and sort of more experimenting with that, because most of the concepts that I can think of are possible already online, but not quite possible in local play. So let's just talk about a couple of the things. The console itself can stream content to the controllers. And if you guys remember when the Wii came out, when the Wii was about to come out, Nintendo made a comment. It was kind of like a weird comment that was, they said you might not even need a TV for the Wii. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So that makes me think that maybe this was kind of in the planning, like maybe even before the Wii, like the Wii was in the planning during the GameCube era.
Yeah.
because that's what this console could enable. It could be like you could have your console in one part of your house, and then you could just have the controllers just somewhere else entirely, and you could be playing with each other or playing different games, or even you could turn it into a tablet PC or something like that. Like the iPad is the hot new thing, right? So Nintendo could effectively enable like four, you know, working or more even working iPads with the same console, with the console doing all the heavy lifting and stuff, and just streaming the actual, you know, processing the data and then streaming the actual video and accepting the input from the controllers. So like if you had like a family with four kids or something, you know, they'd be like, "Daddy, I want an iPad too," or something, and the dad would be like, "You know, fuck you." But if you saw like a commercial or something that's, you know, you can just pay $50 for like what is essentially the same as an iPad in the confines of your home, you know, which is where a lot of people use their iPads anyway, then I think it's a pretty compelling deal just from stuff, something like that, even without going into games, you know?
But what's the advantage to that over, you know, just getting your kids a 3DS? I mean, you know, I mean, understand, I guess this, you know, all the games would be stored on the console in this concept, right? Is that
right? Well, it seems to kind of step on the toes of the 3DS, but I think the 3DS is meant more for like outdoor play and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, just taking it out of your home or something. And this I see as like a console which you can, you know, connect to the TV and play like a normal console, but you can also play locally with each other. And things like internet browsing, I don't think that's really going to be good on the 3DS. If the DS browser was any indication, the DSi browser, it was pretty horrible. So I don't think that's going to be a real option, but something like this could be like an actual pretty decent solution for that. You could maybe even watch videos or chat with each other in different rooms, or, you know, play games with each other and then seamlessly connect online with other friends and things like that. That's sort of what I'm thinking. Like the console itself could stream like wherever you are in the house and just basically turn into like a functioning tablet.
Okay, but you say that like the iPad is all the rage and like this would be a way to compete with that, but the rumors that we've heard, like they seem to agree that it's not going to be a capacitive touchscreen. So how well can it, you know, compete with the iPad then?
Well, obviously it's not going to be as powerful as an iPad, you know, but I'm just saying like a scaled down version that's pretty acceptable, I think. Like if someone just wants to check their email and, you know, what people use the internet for anyway, like 99% of the time, checking their email and browsing the web and stuff like that, I think that kind of stuff could work just as well with just a simple touchscreen, you know? It's not like normal computers have a capacitive touchscreen.
Yeah, no, that's true.
One of the things I'm curious about is where does that leave the Wiimote in all of this? I mean, do you think that they're going to sort of abandon that direction, or do you think this is going to be as compelling to your sort of casual gamers, your family gamers, as the Wiimote was?
Well, this is, you know, they'll have to integrate like Wii backwards compatibility somehow, and that's like a real mystery how they're going to do that. Like if they're just going to stick a big heavy touchscreen on the end of your Wiimote, or if they're going to have it like, you know, as an attachment or something so you can just plug it in like the nunchuck, or how the nunchuck's going to work into everything. It is kind of a mystery how they're going to do it with the form factor. I'm just going to assume that Nintendo has like a decent solution to do it, you know. Yeah. But like you were saying, casual play, that's another difference with the 3DS. The 3DS is pretty much mostly for gamers, you know, I think, as opposed to maybe the DS was. And so this cafe concept is something like just like a nice, you know, sit in the living room, kind of casual, whatever, play some checkers, play some Scrabble, browse the internet, play some Mario Kart or something like that. And so that's kind of how I see it. But I don't know how they're going to integrate with the Wiimote exactly, but it's going to be backwards compatible. So either they'll have like a laser pointer in the front of the pad, or like, I don't know how the form function is going to be at all. I'm kind of worried about it, but hopefully they have something.
Yeah.
Like, I think one of the theories is that since the touchscreen is going to drive up the cost of the controllers so much, there's really only going to be one of them for the Project Cafe, whatever it ends up being. So
that would be interesting, maybe, but I think it would be a little too limiting. I'm sure they'll at least have the ability for multiple screens, right? I
mean, sure, but probably that only one comes with the system, and like, I don't know. I would, in my head, like the Project Cafe is more like you play it with the Wii controllers, and you've got like the one touchscreen that comes with the console. And actually, I know it doesn't sound very Nintendo of not trying to sell.
Yeah, exactly. New peripherals.
I don't know. In my head, like that would be the ideal scenario.
Well, the console is definitely going to come with one screen only. I mean, it's not going to come with multiple of them because it's that'll probably be pretty expensive. I'm guessing about $50 or something. Maybe they will just utilize the existing Wiimotes and things like that. But I don't think there'll just be one screen, because then there'll almost be no point of it, you know? Like, you already have one shared screen for everybody in the first place, and do you really want to sit on the couch and be staring at one little screen and then one big screen, you know?
I mean, one thing I really agree with you about is that title, Cafe, really does, it sounds like there's going to be some kind of social aspect to this console, surely. with a
yeah,
title.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that, don't you think?
And yeah, and I can just imagine, like, just like you're in a real cafe, just like doing a crossword puzzle or something. Like, you could do the same kind of. I'm sure this is really exciting. The gamers are listening to this podcast. Yeah. On my
crossword puzzles. Woo-hoo.
Where's his friends, baby? It's all the rage. Angry Birds. Angry Birds. But like, yeah, but like, you know, if you want to go into a more game-focused territory, there's a lot of things you can do there also. Like, if you think back to connectivity, it was a very similar kind of thing. But the problem with connectivity was that the logistics of putting it all together were very, very difficult, to the point where, like, have you guys even played Four Swords with a full crowd?
No. But can you explain rapidly what the connectivity thing is? Because right, I know for a fact that at least two people who are listening to this don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, yeah, that's a good idea. So connectivity was during the GameCube days. Nintendo had the Game Boy Advance, which had a link cable that linked to the GameCube. And so what you could do was you could link up to four Game Boy Advances to one GameCube and play, you know, so similar to what you were talking about. You would have a screen in your hand, and then you would also have the screen on the TV, and like the driving forces behind that was Zelda Four Swords, which is a Zelda game that played kind of like Link to the Past, except you were all on the same screen until you went in a cave or something, and then you would be on your Game Boy Advance, and you could like play tricks on the other people and steal coins from them, and it was kind of like New Super Mario Bros. Wii, kind of like a competitive, cooperative kind of thing. And I only got to play it one time with Zero, actually, and it was really super fun, you know? Almost nobody could get it going because you needed four Game Boy Advances, four Link cables, one GameCube, like a TV, and, you know, like a billion batteries. just the logistics of it were like super horrible. Only the super hardcore nerds could actually do it, like Mario Kart GameCube.
Wasn't Crystal Chronicles too? Didn't it require like everybody have their own GBA version of Crystal Chronicles or something?
No, I mean, Crystal Chronicles was the same way as Four Swords. Everyone needed a Game Boy Advance, and so it was pretty similar in that respect. Okay. But I mean, even that, like, it's pretty hard to play. And then, like, when we're playing Four Swords, we'd be playing through a level for like 20 minutes, and then one of the cords would come disconnected, and then it's like, you know, just level ends immediately, and just like, oh, everyone's like, fuck, you know. But I think, you know, that kind of thing with the Wii and the DS, Nintendo had a chance to bring it back.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone expected that, you know? Like, the DS has Wi-Fi, the Wii has Wi-Fi, so, you know, people just assumed, oh, okay, so they're going to try a connectivity again. And,
exactly.
You know, Pokemon is going to make this, you know, become really, really big. But they never did for some reason.
I think Pokemon was the one thing they actually did. I think the only real use of connectivity was, like, Pokemon Battle Network. You could use your DS as a controller, which is kind of useless. But go ahead, what were you saying?
Wasn't there Big Brain Academy also had some connectivity on it? Didn't it have like something where you could write screen? I don't know. Anyway, the one of my favorite things about that connectivity in the GameCube era was the Tingle Tuner on Wind Waker, and I was really disappointed actually that they didn't have that in Twilight Princess, because my wife actually played Wind Waker with me from start to finish, and we just had a great time. And when there wasn't
awesome.
A single tuner, it was in Twilight Princess. She was like, "All right, well, forget it. You're playing this one by yourself, buddy." And that was a real bummer, you know.
Did she at least play Mario Galaxy with you or something?
Yeah, she did. She likes girlfriend mode.
And Sin and Punishment? Probably not.
No, maybe not that one.
But yeah, like, I think the Mario Galaxy thing is kind of an extension of that. And I think that the Tingle Tuner thing is one use of connectivity which is really cool. It's like one person can play a single player game, and then another person can interact with the game and sort of feel like they're participating, and maybe even participate like asynchronously or something, you know, like in a different manner than the other guys playing. And that's really cool, and I think they could totally bring that back, and they will totally bring that back with Project Cafe, like something like Mario Galaxy. They could really blow out that concept, you know.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. I mean, that could be really exciting. The only problem that I have with that, if that's what Cafe is about, is that I don't know that it's going to be as easy to sell. I mean, I know what this is. The rumors are that this is aimed more at gamers than the Wii was, but you know, the great thing about the Wiimote was that the first time you saw it in action, I mean, you could get it. You know, it was like an elegant solution to control problems. And, you know, when I brought that thing over for my parents to see, I mean, they got it, and they were playing games with me in like 2 seconds. I don't really see, at least when I imagine it in my head, and when I see those ugly mock-ups that people have done on the forums. Have you seen those things? They look atrocious, you know?
I have. It seems like totally uncomfortable and uneconomic to hold, but hopefully they have some solution.
Yeah, I'm sure Nintendo's got a better plan, but yeah, I mean, I just don't imagine myself showing that to somebody who's a non-gamer or a casual gamer and expecting them to get as fired up about it as they were about the Wii. I mean, maybe Nintendo's plan now, but...
I actually thought the same thing, but then that's when I came upon the iPad thing, which if it's like sold as some kind of like potential like replacement for iPad, like a cheaper, fairly functional replacement for the iPad, like how hard is that to sell people on? For some reason, people are like crazy about that stuff. I don't really understand why, but I mean, that's like the new hotness. And if you show them a video of people like, you know, playing like Monopoly or any board game or something just around without even a console around, without a TV around, just, you know, sitting next to the fireplace and playing, or, you know, playing against each other in front of the TV, you can just show them all the possibilities. And I think it's a pretty easy sell. And also, like you said, it's going to be more gamer focused. And Nintendo, I'm sure they want to include more gamers, so the console has like a longer shelf life, you know, whereas the Wii has kind of died off. But I'm sure they also want to get, you know, just as many casual people or more, because the audience is just so much bigger and it's so much more profitable. It's so much more profitable to make games for that audience because you don't have to spend like billions of dollars, you know, on the graphics and stuff like that. And I definitely think they want to get those people at all. Also, like even with the name Project Cafe. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds casual focused. Do you think it's possible, and this is just coming out of nowhere, but do you think it's possible that that touchscreen is removable? The reason I ask is because part of the reason why the iPad, I think, is the new hotness is that it is so simple to understand. I mean, you just hold it in your hand and you touch it and it does what you expect it to, you know. But the thing that I worry about is, you know, Iwata talked a lot about how modern game controllers are intimidating. And I think it would be easier to sell the casual audience, you know, if they sort of see this little 6-inch screen that's removable and they think of the, you know, we'll see it as a part of the controller, but they'll see it as a touchscreen with a kind of controller extension to it. I mean, do you think they could, they might try to sell it that way, or is that kind of dreamy?
Well, like, I think it's important to note that Iwata also said that buttons are important. They wouldn't get rid of them. Like, they're really important for games.
But he's saying like a detachable.
Even if it's detachable, like bring back the point that it's not a capacitive touchscreen. The iPad is successful because, like, I'm guessing that the fact that it's multi-touch has, you know, something to do with it. If it's a normal touchscreen where you can only, you know, point at, you can only touch one thing at a time, then that makes something like a virtual keyboard a whole lot more cumbersome to use. And so I'm kind of, I don't know, I'm skeptical about the whole competing with iPad thing. Yeah.
Well, another thing is that, you know, like, not just the iPad, but Iwata made a bunch of comments recently where he was saying that he wanted the Wii to compete with, like, TV and just all forms of entertainment, you know? And like with the channels, you can see how they tried to do that to do that with the Weather Channel and the Everybody Votes or whatever. But it, you know, it kind of didn't really take hold.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up because he did say something interesting. He said that with the Wii, they tried to make the Wii compete with television and everything, and they tried that with the channels and with the fact that the Wii's disk slot would light up when you received a message or
Exactly.
But he said that the problem was that they can't force they can't make the Wii turn on your TV and set it to the right channel and, you know, like make everything really, really convenient and easy to use. Like, it's not as if, like, you look at the disk slot lighting up and you can very quickly check what the message is. Yeah, if the controller has a screen, then that they can have control over, and like they can make the screen just light up and immediately show, I don't know, like maybe like Anand's me driving a cart, and I know instantly, okay, so Anand is online playing Mario Kart. Maybe I should turn on my Wii.
Or that somebody's beaten your like leaderboard score or something like that, so you can immediately be like, you know, that bastard, and just go down and just, you know, try to beat it back or something.
And that's pretty cool, but at a certain point, do people, I mean, maybe with television, everybody's got a television in their home, but do you want a little screen, you know, kind of always saying, come on, play me, you know, I mean, is that going to be irritating after a while to see?
Well, I'm sure you could disable it, and you could say the blue light, that bright flashing blue light was like the most irritating thing in the world, but I think it really worked well. It's like the crying in Yoshi's Island 2, because it's so annoying, like, especially in a dark room. You're like, fine, I'll fucking turn on my Wii. I'll just leave it on for a while, and then I'll turn it back off again. That's what I do.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if like consumers would really want that, but I know that Nintendo would definitely want to have something that says like, hey, remember, you've got this console here, play me, you know? Like, they definitely are trying to find solutions for that.
I think there's definitely a good way to do that. It's like Xbox Live, you know, the way it sort of just pushes content to you instead of you having to pull it. But that's what Iwata was talking about also, that Nintendo, the way they did online, you have to search out for the content, and nobody is going to, you know, do that except for the real hardcore people. But if you just push the content and say, like, hey, here's a game, it's available, and this is what it looks like, and you're like, that looks like a good game, I think I'll just buy it right now, you know? That's what they have to move towards is everything, and I think there's definitely a good way to do that, and I don't know if Nintendo will hit it, you know, out of the park this time around, but they're definitely heading in the right direction. And, you know, like you were saying, that the console could always be sleeping, you know? It could always be sleeping, and then you could just, it could still enable the other, the touchscreen displays wherever you are, like in your house or whatever like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and another thing is that the seamless online is also another powerful thing, which is that, you know, you could be playing, like, suppose you have a family of four and you're playing, like, Monopoly. You could be playing with two of you in the same household and then just seamlessly connect online to another. That's the idea of Project Cafe, I think, which is pretty cool also. Kind of,
and all this presupposes that Nintendo is going to have a decent online system this time around.
Yeah. And enough power in the system to actually enable this stuff. But, you know, maybe, I don't know how many Wiis they'll have to duct tape together. It'll be like the width of 12 DVDs, but.
Well, the leaked specs are, well, I don't know if you can call them leaks. I'm still calling them rumors. But, yeah, they seem to point out to hardware that's above what the 360 or PS3 can do. So definitely.
But not like, it's not like, you know, 20 iterations above or anything like that. I mean, it's pretty comparable, wouldn't you say? Or
oh, well, I don't know anything about hardware.
Well, really. Actually, the hardware, you know, like, I think the GameCube and the Wii use an ATI graphics card with an IBM chip, I think it is. And the Xbox used the same thing. And so, and the Wii used an upgraded version of that. The Xbox basically uses an upgraded version of similar technology, and the Wii is going to use a slightly upgraded version of that technology. So I think it'll be pretty easy for people to, like, you know, get a handle on it. Everyone knows how to develop for the Xbox, especially Western developers and stuff. So I think it'll be pretty easy for them to move on to the Wii, and we might even see, like, the best version of multi-platform games on Cafe for at least a couple of years, because I don't think Microsoft wants to start a new console right now, because they're selling a hell of a lot of the Xbox, at least in America. Sony probably wants to start, but, you know, I don't think they can choose their fate right now anyway. And
so do you think the console, I mean, you know, they at the beginning of this generation, they said it's going to last 10 years. Do you think, I mean, it's maybe not that long, but you think the Cafe comes out and everyone else just sits pretty for a couple of years and keeps selling consoles?
Well, the 10-year thing, when Sony said that, they were referring to, like, the PS1, how long the PS1 lasted while they brought the PS2 out. And it's not like they waited. It's not like they waited 10 years to bring out the next generation. I think they were saying that they'll keep supporting the old one, or third parties will keep supporting the old one while they have the new one. But I think this generation will definitely be longer, if for no other reason than, you know, they started out losing a lot of money this generation, and they want to keep making money and just having games for a while. It's they don't want to just hemorrhage money on, like, a new system. And because most of the other competitors, unless they follow Nintendo's route, which they might, they lose money on every system for a while, you know? They just eat it and then expect to make it back on software. So right now, Microsoft, I'm sure, doesn't want to start a new generation, because really the momentum is with them.
Yeah, it's only picking up steam now. I mean, like, they're increasing their sales compared to previous years.
Yeah, which, and I don't understand.
It's been
exactly.
out, yeah, it's been out for, what, like 3-4 years now?
It's probably five, right?
They released a year earlier.
Yeah.
So it was a late bloomer, I guess.
I guess, and maybe, you know, the world isn't ready for to spend that much. I honestly don't understand why Microsoft is doing so well right now. I feel like their exclusive and first-party offerings are just kind of, like, either just not there or kind of awful and just kind of the same thing.
Yeah, but I guess maybe exclusives are overrated by gamers.
I mean,
I think it's Live. I mean, Live's a big part of it, because a lot of people that I know have Xbox. I mean, I actually don't know too many people who have a PlayStation. So if you're going to buy one of the HD twins, I mean, friends are playing Street Fighter with each other or something. You want to get in on that. I mean, that's the reason.
It is true that only losers have a PlayStation 3. But I mean,
shut up.
No, but you know, Xbox Live that's huge. It's especially huge for retention. I think that's really interesting. Like, when you get on Xbox Live and you have an Xbox, which I do. Do you?
Yeah, I've got a 360. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, just when you log in and you see all your friends are playing something, and it's like, it feels like you're almost part of a community, even if you're totally antisocial like me. And, you know, people who aren't antisocial, they have their groups that they game together with. And that kind of thing, you know, people aren't going to all switch over communally to the PlayStation 3. You know, that's why the PlayStation 3 is often like a second console or something in America, I think, because all your friends are playing Xbox, they're all on Xbox Live, and like even when people's consoles break, they should be like, you know, whatever, I'm not going to support Microsoft anymore. But they're not. They're like, oh, yeah, the new Microsoft model is out, I'm going to get that one. It's quieter, and you know, it's black, and I want the new Xbox. And, you know, I can understand that. Like, I think a lot of that retention is because of Xbox Live. Like, whereas if you're Wii broke or something, you'd just be like, ah, fuck them. I'm gonna get an Xbox 360 or PlayStation 3.
The whole Xbox Live thing is hard to understand for me because I've never really seen anyone's Xbox online. Like, I know a couple of people with Xboxes, but they never, I don't know, they don't seem to have Live. And so I don't know, like, this whole seeing your friends playing online thing. I've never seen it in action. And, like, from you know, like, PSN has basically the same thing, I think, but maybe it's not in your face as much.
The functionality is pretty similar by now, but at the beginning it wasn't there when a lot of people were buying the consoles.
Well, I guess so, but I've always had, like, you know, like, there's the cross-media bar where you can see, and one of the bars is all the people on your friends list and what they're playing. So, yeah, I don't know, but you have to go look at it. You can also have messages that tell you, like, so-and-so is starting a game of this right now. But that you quickly turn that off when you realize that you still get those messages when you're watching a movie.
Yeah, so it is irritating. You know, like, one of the things is that, I guess, cross-game chat is one feature that's still not supported on the PlayStation 3, I believe. And it sounds kind of, to me, like the most irritating thing in the world to be playing a game and having people like, yeah, so that Susie told me, she tells me. You know, but I guess people use it, and like they have party chat, and you can chat with like 8 people while you're all playing different games, which sounds kind of maddening, but whatever. I guess people like it.
So going back to Project Cafe, I guess one of the possible uses would be that you would see all those annoying messages on your you know, controller instead of your TV screen.
Well, that's another cool thing, is that just like the 3DS and the DS, like, you know, even ports are kind of neat on them because they can take all the HUD elements and just move it somewhere else to another screen. Like, Project Cafe could also do that. You could just be like totally immersed in the thing on, you know, on the big screen, and then, you know, if you want to see like how much inventory you have or shift stuff around, then you can just go to your touchscreen and do it.
Cool.
And you know, like, you can repeat a lot of the, you know, DS or 3DS functionality. I mean, I don't know how much use people really made out of it, but stuff like maps and stuff like that, it'll just be a lot more seamless to be able to control all that stuff, even for a one-player game on your little touchscreen, you know, while you're playing, I think.
Yeah.
And one last thing I wanted to talk about was all of the connectivity games. Like, I actually really like the connectivity games. I don't know if you guys remember Pac-Man Versus. You probably played that, right?
No,
I never played
haven't.
It. Yeah. It looks cool. I mean, it looked really exciting. Yeah.
It's cool, and the logistics of that weren't as bad because you needed one Game Boy Advance and one link cable and then 3 controllers, and then they were all wired, and you'd be passing it back and forth because you switch off when you know, the Pac-Man gets eaten, you switch to the next player, and eventually the wires would just become this like tangled snarl of just horrible like 4 wires coiling around each other until you're all just like right next to each other. But that was very fun, and you know, that's the kind of thing they could bring back. Like, I think one of the really interesting things is like asynchronous multiplayer. Like, that's Pac-Man versus asynchronous multiplayer. So how it worked was the person on the GBA would basically play it just like Pac-Man.
Yeah.
And then the people on the screen would be the ghosts who were trying to hunt him down. And they would use the normal controllers. And then the GBA guy would be Pac-Man. And the Pac-Man player would have to evade the ghosts. And I think that kind of asynchronous multiplayer is actually really cool.
And just specifying, like, only the guy with the Game Boy could see where Pac-Man was on the board, right?
Exactly. And the ghost view was limited. Yeah.
Yeah.
So each of them had their own window, which was a limited space, so it wouldn't, you know, it would be fair. And I think that's a really cool concept, which, you know, it's possible on other medium. Like, all this stuff is possible online, but nobody ever actually pushes it or tries anything with it. But when they do, like in the case of Splinter Cell Chaos Theory, where one team was the terrorists and one team was the spies, or in the new spy game that's coming out, where one person is, you know, like the spy that's trying to assassinate somebody and somebody else is the detective that's trying to find him, you know, and identify him. Like, it always excites people, and I think Nintendo likes to push that kind of thing, and they were starting to do the connectivity, but then the whole thing was just kneecapped because everyone was like, oh, connectivity, I don't like it.
Yeah, well, that's the point I was going to bring up, is that everybody kind of hated it. I mean, that E3 where they announced Pac-Man Versus is like notorious as one of the worst Nintendo showings ever. And so,
yeah,
you know, I mean, so even though I think it was, I always thought it was a cool idea. I mean, yeah, there were, you know, limitations because of the having to buy all those cables and stuff. But there's a part of me that feels like if they, you know, is Nintendo really going to bring out their new console built around a concept that was just soundly routed at E3 years ago. You know, are they double dipping on something that people rejected already? You know,
well, they already double dipped on the Virtual Boy, right? But but like, I think that was totally unfair the way connectivity was just like the logistics of it were bad, but the ideas were so cool, and I really wish they'd done more of that on the Wii and the DS, but maybe they were just holding off because they knew like something with Cafe like existed. And like, there were so many games, like Four Swords is really fun, you know, and people were like, most people haven't played it, but it's actually really enjoyable, and all those games are really enjoyable, and I'm really sad at the games that they canceled. Do you guys remember that the games, some of the games that were proposed for it but were canceled?
No.
I've got no idea, no.
So, like, I remember them all because this is, like, my biggest grudge against Nintendo for canceling these games. Kirby's Tilt and Tumble is probably my favorite handheld game. It's awesome. It's, like, just a labyrinth kind of game with Kirby. And they were going to make Tilt and Tumble 2 for connectivity, you know, where you could bounce from the screen to the one screen to the other and such. And then it was going to come with, like, a RAM pack with a tilt sensor that you would put into your Game Boy Advance, and then, you know, it would download certain information through there through the cord and stuff like that. So that's one game that canceled. That turned into Roll-O-Rama, and that was also canceled, even though both games had, like, really, really good impressions and stuff from E3. And,
I would only play that game on the Game Boy Player, personally.
Kirby's Tilt and Tumble. I thought about trying that. It's the reason I keep my shitty old, like, first generation Game Boy around is because you can't put the cart upside down, because then you have to reverse your directions, or you have to play on your back with the screen in the air.
But by the time connectivity rolled out, they had the GBA SP, which had the upside down slot for the game cart. So
yeah, which
I'm guessing they would have corrected that.
Oh yeah, it ruins that, but it doesn't ruin Koro Koro Happy Puzzle Panichu,
Yeah, no idea what you're talking about.
It's another tilt sensor game that I imported from Japan because I was like, ooh, this tilt sensor is so awesome. I have to get everything that uses the tilt sensor. And also the other game I was supposed to use it, that Diddy Kong Racing on the, or whatever, one of the racing games on the GBA was supposed to use it, but eventually didn't. And so the Koro Koro Happy Puzzle Panichu, it's this weird puzzle game which is like really difficult to understand, but basically you just tilt from side to side to move these pieces around, and that has a, you know, nowadays they have a setting where you can reverse the things if it's upside down, but Tilt and Tumble unfortunately didn't have that.
Right. Okay, I guess we're going to wrap up the Project Cafe topic. I just want to quickly mention that while you guys are going to be looking at E3, you know, on your computers and stuff, I'm going to be playing Project Cafe at E3.
You know, I'm almost jealous, except I'm sure you'll be standing in lines for like 3 hours, and we'll just get the things like lightning quick immediately, and we'll have so much more actual like information than you, although you'll have like hands-on of two games.
You know, I'll have my 3DS in mind, so
yeah.
Okay.
Now I am jealous. Oh, your
street
passes.
I'm gonna get tons of street passes, yeah. For last time, because I was quite negative on the whole topic of video games in general, and I said that, you know, there wasn't really, I said a lot of really ridiculous things now that I think about you can't really, I can't really talk to people about it, it's not really that social or that well, you know, embraced, and, you know, it's not like TV shows where you can talk about the last night's Lost episode with your coworkers and stuff. But then, you know, I've been talking for at least 10 hours on this podcast about video games, so I don't know, I see the irony.
Well, it's somewhat true, though. I mean, you can't just corner somebody at work and talk about, oh, this awesome dungeon I played in Zelda.
You actually can corner them. I mean, they might not like it, but I do that all the time. No, but, you know, I was on the train yesterday, and there were these people talking the whole trip about American Idol, and just like, oh, yeah, she's so good, and she comes from a really rough background and this and that. And I was like, God, I don't want to be one of those people. I don't want those water cooler conversations. Just leave me alone with my video games.
Also, like, the whole, like, can't discuss video games at work thing, like, do we kind of change that? Because definitely it was a topic of discussion, even at my workplace, where everyone is older than me and haven't really, you know, like, they're like, video games? What is that? Is that, like, I only play pinball.
Like Chris.
Yeah.
Total diet of pinball.
So, yeah, so I just wanted, you know, to do a positive topic, and I thought, even with my positive topic idea, I was quite pessimistic, and I thought, like, well, there's no way we're going to be able to discuss that for 20 minutes
with just
three, four people, so I thought, like, hey, let's try something. Let's try to get comments from the message board, and, I'm going to have to read them, and that kind of... That's going to be painful, but sorry about that. French-Canadian here.
Your soothing voice will make it all go down nicely.
Well, maybe I'll get you guys to read some of them.
Yeah, my WordPad crashed, so it's not going to happen for me. But
wow, that's terrible.
I know.
Yeah, but first, why don't you guys come up with like one anecdote, for instance, and maybe we can work from there.
Yeah, I got a story. I mean, this is more recent, you know, talking about the Wii. I mean, when people talk to me about, you know, whether or not there was a question on one of the forums the other day about whether the Wii really was a revolution or not. And a lot of people are kind of down on it and saying it wasn't. But I've got this one story, and to me, it just totally justifies the whole enterprise to me, you know, is, you know, I've been married now for 7 years, and I've got in-laws, and they're, you know, good people, and we get along, and all that, but we don't have like a close relationship. We don't do much. We don't have a lot in common. Most of the times I go over there and it's like, hey, that guy's here, you know, don't talk to him, you know? And so the year that the Wii launched, you know, I took my console home at Thanksgiving and I just thought, I'm just going to make those guys play Wii Sports with me. And man, it worked like a treat. It was fantastic. I mean, I got the thing out and they're like, well, what's this? And, you know, I said, well, let me show you. We'll play some tennis. And, my father-in-law, who's real, like, you know, he's a nice guy, but just doesn't have a lot in common with me and doesn't ever talk to me at all, you know. Like, we stayed up until 1 in the morning playing Wii Bowling. You know, he was just trying to beat me at Wii Bowling.
Was it still totally silent, or were you guys actually chatting?
No, we were chatting and laughing, and he was, you know, I'm going to get you next time, you know, one more game, you know. I mean, seriously, it goes from like a guy who's probably said like 7 words to me, you know, and like 5 of those were at the wedding, you know, and then, you know, suddenly we're yucking it up like good friends. And to me, you know, it's like there's no other system that has ever been released that I could have done that with. I mean, I can't bring my 360 over and play Call of Duty with him. You know, it's really, that was the kind of the magic of Wii Sports and social. I mean, that console was social in a way that I've just never seen. And, you know, I don't know if we'll ever see again, to be honest, but I'm really grateful as a Nintendo fan to Nintendo just because I had that one experience, you know.
I also think it was revolutionary for the same reason. Like never before could you actually play on an equal level, at least for the, you know, first couple of months you had the console, with people who didn't play games, you know?
Yeah,
oh, absolutely, yeah.
And it's totally fun. And, like, you can play with people who, you know, who have never played, and it's fun for you because you can actually compete, and it's fun for them because they can actually compete too, although I've never lost in Wii Tennis.
Right.
Yeah, my sister beat the hell out of me at Wii Boxing. Like, you know, just over and over again pummeled me. And I was like, what? This game is about violence. How are you beating me at this, you know? And
one of my friends came over, actually, with his wife. And I showed them Wii Boxing, and they were boxing against each other. And she's, like, kind of younger than him. And it was so hilarious. He was just, like, sweating and just, like, just on the floor, just panting. And she was just, like, just raring to go. And she was beating the shit out of him. And I was just cracking up. And it was so funny. And every time they come over now, I make them play Wii Boxing because it's just the most hilarious.
Breaking them up.
Pretty much, yeah. But it's funny.
I've got a similar story to Chris, but with my own dad. Like, it's not like, we do speak and stuff. Like, it's not, I do have a good relationship with him, but he's never really been interested in video games, you know, like he never really played them. And I think that Wii Bowling was the first instance where we actually, like, he was actually interested in trying it and, you know, playing against me. And yeah, he too was like requesting, you know, hey, do you want to play Wii Bowling now? And I don't know, it was for the first time in my life, you know, like 27 or something. All of a sudden, my dad asks to play video games with me. And, you know, I too wonder if it's never going to happen again. It seems like Wii Bowling has, like, that hold over old people.
It's always Wii Bowling. I wish it was, like, Wii Tennis or something competitive.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, yeah, tennis I thought was a lot more fun, you know, but, man, they just would play, you know, frame after frame of Wii Bowling.
Yeah. It's like, hey,
I mean, would you guys agree that that's like the killer app of the generation? I mean, not just Wii Sports, but Wii Bowling? I mean,
specifically Wii Bowling, yes. Yes, it is. Old people play it and kids play it and everyone plays it. And I don't even like real bowling. I'm like, do we have to play virtual bowling again? Like, well, let's do boxing. It doesn't feel like boxing, but it's still pretty cool. And table tennis is pretty good on Wii Sports Resort. Actually, how many games do you guys think?
I love that. Oh, God.
Yeah, it's good. I'm also
Beat Lucia in that game.
I haven't even tried because I want to keep
she's like Mike Tyson from Punch Out, dude. She's impossible.
Oh my God.
She's murder.
You know, like, but how many games do you guys think, you know, Wii Sports, it totally succeeded in that, bringing everybody together. How many games on the Wii do you think actually did that? In my experience, like Wii Sports Resort, and Boom Blocks were the best things to do, were the best ways to get that kind of play. Like Mario Kart, people say Mario Kart does, but I don't know. It's a little too difficult for most people, in my experience.
Yeah.
What do you guys think? But Boom Blocks is like, that's the one of the only games that I felt was like a real competitor Wii Sports, and anyone can play, anyone can have fun. There's tons of modes. It's really fun for everybody, not just the person. You know, it's a lot about physics and stuff, and not just that, so people can compete.
Yeah, I still haven't played Boom Blocks. I gotta get a copy of it because it sounds
like me neither.
Game.
Oh, are you serious? It's like the best multiplayer game. It's like one of the best third-party games on the Wii. It's like one of the only multiplayer games that really satisfies that same criteria. It's really fun.
Well, that's the thing. I mostly stick to single-player stuff, so that would be my problem, I guess.
No, I would have loved that. I was always bringing people over and making them play Wii games. I mean, that would have been really good for the library. I don't know. I don't think I was trolling around the boards when that game was released, so I just sort of missed it.
Wii Sports Resort is another one where I got some success getting non-gamers to play, specifically Frisbee Golf.
Yeah.
My former roommate and I just, we got competitive, and that game is amazing.
Yeah, that's my favorite game of the generation, man. That's a killer game.
And Wii Sports Resort?
Dog, yeah. Because it was doing what the Wii was supposed to do, you know?
I couldn't believe they didn't allow you to import your Nintendog into Wii Sports Resort. That would have been such a killer combination. They just hate connectivity now. That's the thing. And I think that'll happen on Cafe, too. They'll have like your Nintendog like prancing around the screen and stuff like that.
All right, so other than connecting with other people, which is something that usually normal people do normally.
Without the help of video games?
Nerds, normally don't need video games for. Do you guys have anecdotes for the benefits of video games?
Well, I honestly think that it gives people superhuman reflexes, possibly superhuman.
You generally think that it gives you superpowers.
Yeah, I do, like Spider-Man. No, but like, I've always had really good reflexes, and I can't think of any other possible reason because I don't do any physical activity whatsoever. And like, you know, if something happens, I can't really do anything, but I can react. Like, my nervous system, like, sends off an alarm, and it's like, move, and then I don't move. But, you know, I still have that reaction. And I think that's because of video games, because that sort of, like, you know, like they say, hand-eye coordination also, that definitely helps. I mean, like, doctors, you know, they say these days... Because like
I've read like reports of like this surgeon who would play Super Monkey Ball before an operation because it helped.
And with stuff like trauma center, I mean, stuff like endoscopy, it basically is like a video game. You know, you have a screen and you're moving stuff around with the controller. And what's the difference? Like, so people who have more precision at that kind of stuff, like, it just generally helps your hand-eye coordination and your reflexes, I think.
Yeah, I mean, even driving, which, I mean, seems kind of strange. But,
oh, yeah, totally.
I mean, there are times where I had one time where this van just pulled out in front of me. I'm going 70 miles an hour, and he just pulled right there. And I swerved out of the way, and I remember thinking after that, it was like, wow, I was really steady there. I wonder if video games sort of, you know, I don't know, gave me the reaction time to do that.
Actually, that exact same thing has happened to me when I was driving, like, multiple times, when you can swerve out of the way or something. And then one time, somebody kind of cut me off, and then I rammed him off the road, and he exploded. And I was like, I couldn't have done that without playing Burnout. And no, but, like, even, like after playing F-Zero or something like that, like, normal driving seems like nothing, you know? Like, things that would trouble normal people, like, the reaction time you need to adjust to them is almost nothing compared to that. And also, like, have you guys ever played, like, Sega Rally or anything like that? Jumping to the arcades?
I'm so boring.
Oh, yeah, no.
Sega Rally is, like, it's exactly like driving in the snow in real life. So that's another positive aspect. That's all I got. Okay, go ahead.
All right. Personally, I'm a terrible driver, but I'm just generally a very distracted person. I barely got, like, one out of five words that you guys were saying anyway.
Okay.
I'm not sure this is a positive topic.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if, like, it helped my reflexes. Maybe I would already be dead if not for video games. I don't know.
Maybe be an even worse driver?
Yeah, an even worse driver. But I do have a story here from Helium Sky, from the boards. She says, once on the highway, when I tried to swerve a little into the shoulder to get away from someone who looked like they were trying to change into my lane and into me, my car tried to take a hard left. There's a barrier if you go too far into the shoulder, since I was in the left lane. Instead of the little wiggle that usually gets me away from people coming too close to my lane. It took quite a bit of wobbling around in the shoulder. There's a lot of parentheses here. Anyway, so she did a lot of wobbling to regain control. And afterwards, she kind of wondered if all the experience in racing video games is what saved her, since oversteering is a huge problem for her and racers.
Yeah.
So it could have been the coordination instincts from that, since I wasn't panicked at all during that time. I spent wobbling around at 60 miles per hour. And also, she had, like, a rainy day once, seeing a car in the right lane making a huge U-turn into the left lane and hitting the barrier, and she wonders if that's what her car wanted to do.
You know, that's interesting. I remember when virtual reality was all the rage in the 90s, they talked about how people who were afraid of heights could, you know, kind of go into simulations of sort of stepping off of a building and things like that, and that it would actually help cure their fear of heights or lessen it. And I wonder if that's kind of the same principle in these driving stories where, you know, instead of panicking, we have experience in those sort of, you know, deathly scenarios because of video games that keeps us calm, you know? I mean, potentially,
some kind of crisis coping mechanism.
Yeah. I would assume that they wouldn't be spending millions and millions of dollars on flight simulators to train pilots if
I think they use the actual game engines and stuff like that for military simulations and flight simulations, and, you know, military simulations are good for the world, right? No, but what I was going to say was that there was sticking to the driving topic, which we seem to be stuck on, there was a machine at the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago, which was a driving simulator, and before you started, it would ask you, what are you going to drink, like water, orange juice, or beer, and you would put in like 1 to 100 glasses. And then you'd have to drive like as if you were under the influence of like 100 glasses of beer. And I remember
100 glasses of orange juice.
Yeah, and actually, what is interesting is that driving with 100 glasses of orange juice is almost as bad as driving with 100 glasses of beer. Like, I assume it's like water poisoning or whatever people get. But yeah,
orange poisoning.
But I mean, the simulators, like, do you remember Full Spectrum Warrior? I think that's what it was called.
Yep.
It's a game that, it's a, like a strategy game that evolved from like a strategy simulation.
Wasn't that thing kind of turn-based?
It was kind of turn-based, but it was like a tactical thing. So it was like, I'm going to send these people over here, they're going to flank over here, and I'm going to do this. I haven't actually played it, so I'm just going to spout out these generalizations. But even though I have it, it's unopened, as all my games are. But, yeah, like, so things like that, like military simulations, you know, they had the Army, America's Army game that was, like, sort of simulations, like flight simulators. I'm pretty sure that they actually use the, you know, like, the retail flight simulator technology and stuff like that for those kind of things these days. So that's another sort of beneficial area.
Cool. Okay, so we've got, like, the whole social thing. We've got the reflexes. Do you guys think there's other benefits to video games?
Well, like you were saying, benefits, you know, You're saying it like video games need to be defended, which I think is kind of part of its social stigma. You know, like if you read comic books, you're like, oh, why do you read comic books? That's not normal. You know, but if you watch football, and if you're crazy about football and know every single player, everyone's just like, oh, yeah, cool. I know that. Like, that's cool. But yeah. I don't think they need to be defended more than any other type of entertainment media. You know, like you have a certain amount of time per day and you want to relax. And I think games are at least as good as the other ways to do it, like TV and reading books and stuff like that. And maybe even better because you're interacting and like engaging your brain with strategies and stuff like that, you know?
I don't disagree, but now you're implying that my positive topic is stealthily a negative one. okay, I can't win, can I? Yeah.
No, you can't, no.
Well, you know, I'm not just saying, like, you know, how do video games make you a better person? I mean, it's more like, what do they do for you, really?
I mean, isn't it enough that they just give you, like, an outlet to relax and sort of escape and, like a good form of escapism? That
no, that's a perfectly valid answer. Actually, it would tie in with one of my anecdotes, I guess. Back when I was in college and I was starting my first work term, I was pretty stressed out, you know, like when you go from college, where basically you have all the free time in the world, to starting in, you know, a real job.
It's like the worst time of life, yeah.
pretty much. And I know someone made fun of me on some message board because I was like, oh, so stressful. I'm working 40 hours an hour. And the guy was like studying law. And
that is stressful.
She was like, you know, just what the hell. But still, you know, I guess I'm not, I wasn't ready for that. And I was, it was around the time that Wind Waker came out, and people, you know, rag on like that game's sailing.
Sailing,
you know, like you don't really have anything to do. You know, it's very, it's a lot of downtime. But it happened to be like the perfect game at the right time. Sailing was incredibly relaxing for me,
yeah.
And just coming back from work and, you know, playing Wind Waker, it was extremely relaxing. And I don't think, you know, I had spent the whole day in front of a computer screen, so I didn't want especially to read because my job was a proofreader or things like that. And I didn't, you know, like it was crummy outside, you know, it was winter and I was in a foreign city and in a really small room. And so, like, there wasn't really... I don't know. I was in Ottawa, and there's not a whole lot of bars there. So, yeah.
You can drown your sorrows in alcohol, the socially approved form of dealing with the stress.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. So, yeah, basically, video games were really helpful during that time.
I'll back you up on that, though. I mean, I found the sailing in Wind Waker really relaxing, too. I mean, it was. It's kind of weird that gets such a hard time from people, to me, because I thought it was, you know, there's always people talking about wanting a Zelda that goes back to the original Zelda, where you have just kind of this open world that you can go around and travel. Well, hey, wasn't Wind Waker that game to some degree?
But I think, yeah, I don't know. I think that the first game is especially challenging.
Yeah, you know, it's very difficult. So, like, you have to. The thing
is, that's true. Yeah.
Okay. First of all, if you guys really enjoy relaxing games, maybe you'll be pumped when the vitality sensor makes its dramatic comeback on the Project Cafe system as some kind of headband you wear that with like needles.
But getting pumped for it would be bad.
That's true.
It's like the opposite.
But it'll just calm you down. You'll just be able to see your heartbeat and you'll be able to, like, you know, whatever. I don't know.
This guy got the highest score on the leaderboard because he had a heart attack and died. Yeah.
I think that would be pretty cool. No, I think the possibilities of biofeedback are actually pretty interesting also, and there's a chance that it might come with the cafe box. And things like companies like Valve are always talking about how that's the next step in control mechanisms is like biofeedback and stuff like, you know, even on the N64 they had Bio Tetris, which it had multiple modes. One mode was if you're doing badly, it would slow it down, and the other mode was like heart attack mode, which if you're doing badly, it would just keep speeding up. You know, like if your pulse was raised, it would just keep challenging you more and more. But like as far as we were talking about with Wind Waker, I don't remember what we were talking about.
It was the right game at the right time. I can understand why would be down on it, but for me, like, it happened to be what I needed.
Oh, right.
And also, like, Animal Crossing was around the same time, I think.
Yeah.
And so, well, it was at least, like, one of the games I was playing over there, and also that game is very relaxing. And it, you know, I was pretty cut off from all of my friends, so it gave me virtual friends to give furniture.
Yeah, but you weren't cut off from Sally Skunk and... Like Jerry, I don't know.
Badger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the friends that I talk, I taught bad words to.
Yeah. And when I was hilarious, I would just send them the most vile, just nasty messages about how much I hated them, and they'd be like, "Oh, thank you. Here's a couch."
Yeah.
But yeah, like you were saying about relaxing games like Wind Waker, I think some people didn't like it because, you know, like going to the arcade topic a little bit, the birth of video games is like kind of arcades, you know? And what are arcades? They're kind of a thrill ride. You know, nobody wants to play a boring arcade game. You want to get in, you want to have as much fun as possible and kind of in a concentrated dose, and then you want to leave and just, you know, go about your normal life. So I think a lot of people don't really want games to be relaxing, although, and Wind Waker I thought was too relaxing a bit in the sailing, but I did like Animal Crossing, so I'm a hypocrite.
Right. It was, as I said, it was just what I needed at the time. I've played The Flower more recently, which is another game that's supposed to be very relaxing and everything, and I like it, but it didn't do for me what the sailing did in Wind Waker, because it wasn't really, you know, I don't need that much relaxing right now, I guess.
Yeah.
And my life is quite calm. Do you guys have any other anecdotes?
I think the listeners probably have enough anecdotes by now, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I still want to read some more comments.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. Okay.
There's a whole discussion about art, the art of video games. A lot of people on the board are very artistic people, and so Game Dad Grant, well, let's just call him Grant, said that the whole reason he got into art and drawing and then went to art school was because of video games. Gotta love video game art, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I'm kind of surprised he went to art school. I thought he was a high-powered business person. Like, he's got a photo in his Facebook of him and his wife with George W. Bush.
Really?
So, yeah.
Are you sure it's not just photoshopped or something? Is his face on George W. Bush's body or his wife?
It's real. It's real. Again, in the topic of art, Carlos Rox says, Dead Space is the main reason I decided to study game art and design. You could say it was a long time coming with my love for all games, but Dead Space pushed it over the edge. Dead Space is the reason I want to get into this business. It literally changed my entire life. Some of my best friends I will ever have, I met in just the past 2 years since I've been going to this school. I guess he means like a game design school.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
So Dead Space made my life better. Thank you, Dead Space. I love you. Isn't that beautiful?
It is. I love Dead Space too, even though I haven't opened it yet. But you know, the like in Japan, like these days, they say that a lot of young artists, the place they go is the video game industry. Like they used to go to anime and stuff like that, but the anime industry is even worse off than the video game industry. So, and it is like a big, it's big business. You know, they go in that field eventually and get eaten up and chewed up and spit out.
Yeah, and like when you've got an art degree, where else are you going to make money?
Yeah, exactly. If you can't scam everybody into believing you're like the next Andy Warhol or whatever, then your options are limited probably.
Yeah, I think that like with subsidies, if you're an actual artist, you're going to get like maybe $10,000 a year.
Yeah.
And if you work at EA, they've got plenty of money to throw around. And I know someone who's got like a, you know, $60,000 salary. So that's pretty good, right?
Yeah,
that's not bad.
For an artist.
That's a lot of K's.
Yeah. And also he gets to go to events where he gets to like shoot actual firearms and stuff, because that's really important when you want to make gun textures, apparently.
Well, it's probably important for the gun sounds, right? They always do that. That would be a fun job.
Oh, too. But he's not in sound design. He makes the textures. Also, another anecdote by Zero. He says, I honestly don't think my music would be anything close to what it is without video games. Oh, and by the way, like Zero is the guy who made the little remix that you hear. Like it's the theme of this podcast. So yeah, I don't mean just all the video game music I've listened to over the years, but I mean the sort of inspiration I get from the creativity of games in general. When I'm writing songs, I often have some vague theme in my head, the kind of stuff you only see in video games. Like, this song will have that feel when you've just scaled a huge mountain, and then a bird comes down and offers you a ride up to the city in the clouds.
Like a,
whatever that means.
You play like an Ice Climber?
I don't know.
Ice Climber has awesome music. Have you guys heard the remix?
Yeah.
PictoChat? Not PictoChat. What am I saying? PictoBits.
PictoBits, yeah.
No,
it's awesome.
I love those remixes. Oh, they're great.
Well, I know what I'm going to use as transitions for this podcast.
Yeah,
now.
Do it. Use the Ice Climbers or what's the really funky one? Like, they're all funky. NES music was so funky. That's what's missing in music today, game music today. Now it's all atmospheric. They've lost the funk.
No, you know where the funk is in the Genesis. That had a really crazy soundtrack. Well, yeah, that, of course. I don't want to talk about that. Guillaume and I may not agree on that one, but yeah.
Yeah, the Genesis has that sound chip where every sound just comes like... It felt like distorted farting, like Atomic Dog or something. So maybe that's why they opted for funk on that one. But the NES was just super funky.
All right, so is that it for the this topic? There's a few more comments, but I'm not sure if we're going to have time to go through them all. Oh, actually, there's one last one that's interesting by Abdu, which I want to mention. He says, when I was in second grade, my mother took me to a counselor to have me evaluated. I was found to be dyslexic, and through some tests, she recommended that I problem solve. Some of her suggestions were board games, math, puzzles, and video games. I still remember playing Donkey Kong Jr. in her office. That's basically how I ended up with an NES when it debuted in the U.S. and why I minored in mathematics in college.
That's cool.
Isn't that awesome?
Wow. Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Playing Donkey Kong Jr. math, I guess.
I wish we had a little bit more detail, because I've never heard of like video games to solve dyslexia.
Well, for problem-solving skills in general, stuff like Zelda, that's what it's all about nowadays, right? Like solving puzzles and stuff like that?
Yeah, I guess so. Although nowadays, Zelda is more like about remembering all the ways, all the past puzzles. And
oh, no, but I think Twilight Princess had a lot of fresh puzzles. I think Wind Waker had the most stale kind of puzzles, but Twilight Princess had some pretty fresh ones, I thought. Like, they're not that difficult, but I thought, I don't know.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But if you guys want to hear more anecdotes, like touching anecdotes, moving anecdotes.
Oh, I'm not done yet, actually.
Okay.
I want to mention one last aspect, which a lot of people wouldn't suspect, I guess, and it's the whole getting into shape thing. There's a surprising number of people who apparently got into shape through video games. Anonymous Mastermind says that Wii Fit gave him the motivation he needed to lose excess weight and get back in shape. He ended up losing about 35 pounds and kept it off, thanks to being more health conscious. And he thinks the most useful exercise for him was Dance Dance Revolution. It improved his cardio endurance and helped sweat off quite a few pounds. And there's quite a few number of people who said that, although like the I'm not going to go through the whole thread, but I think Helium Sky had this similar story, and CB200. And it's kind of amazing. Like, some people lost something like 60 pounds.
Yeah, Dance Dance Revolution specifically, there's tons of stories of people being like 500 pounds, and then, you know, Dance Dance Revolution came out, and then they're like 150 or something like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. I don't know that I remember ever seeing a fat guy play Dance Dance Revolution.
Oh, well, you have to catch them at the beginning of their Christmas.
Yeah. I see them once they're pros, yeah.
Yeah, if you catch them later on, they just look like Adonises. Oh, I actually have somewhat the opposite story of just falling into more and more disrepair while playing video games, but I won't share that anecdote because it's not positive. It's negative.
All right, shut up. I never got into DDR personally, but Wii Fit, like Anonymous Mastermind touched on something. He said that it gave him the motivation to lose weight, and that's pretty much what that thing is good for, I think. I had the same experience, and like I remember someone on message board saying like, oh yeah, like he was saying sarcastically, yeah, you're really going to get ripped by doing Wii Fit. But, you know, like that's not really the point, and I think that just the fact that it's a scale that tracks your progress every time.
Definitely,
and kind of like gives you tips and encourages you and everything, like it does make you more health conscious. It kind of brings that video game mentality of trying to beat your high score into, you know, I never got a gym membership before Wii Fit. I never, you know, jogged. But I started afterwards because I was like, yeah, okay, so the Wii Fit exercises are good, but I want to do better than that. And that gave me the motivation to go outside and, you know, run a little.
And flap your arms like a chicken while you're running?
Yeah, but that thing, like,
that stays inside.
Really good cardio on that thing, though. I mean, honestly. I mean, yeah, you're not going to get, you know, big, you know, muscular, you know, Mr. Universe body from that thing. But surely the cardio was really good.
Well, I think yoga is actually a lot more difficult than it seems like
that's
is,
true.
Right? Like, it does make you kind of break a little bit of a sweat.
Yeah, and also it's, you know, to avoid injuries, like, what is recommended? Like, sure, like, you can stretch before and after exercise, but the best way is to have a regular stretching routine, and that's what yoga is.
Yeah, exactly. And you were saying about gamifying, like, exercising before. I think that was Nintendo's big coup last generation in general, with stuff like Brain Age and Wii Fit. They found a way to, like, you know, make horrible, tedious, but but good, you know, tasks that are actually beneficial to you into like a sort of a game and make them more palatable that way. And, you know, they sold a lot of games based on that concept.
Yeah,
and I'm glad that they tried it because, like, seriously, like, who else is better to do that than Nintendo? Like, they're experts at games, and if they can bring that, you know, expertise to other aspects, to other things, that's awesome, you know?
I like what you said about, Guillaume, about kind of bringing that video game mentality to those kind of mundane things because, I mean, Brain Age to me was fantastic. And, it had been a while. When that game came out, I'd been out of school for, you know, a number of years. It's been a while since I just sat down and did math problems. And I wouldn't have done that if the game was just, you know, wasn't giving me that score at the end, you know.
And it was fun, right? You're like, yeah.
It was fun, yeah. Cool. Suddenly, since when have I ever sat down and just did math problems for the hell of it? Never, man. But, you know, they made it a game. Same thing with Wii Fit. I don't know. It's a trick, I tell you.
Yeah, it's that sense of accomplishment. On Kinect, they'll probably have like achievements for losing weight or something, so people will actually be motivated to do it or something. But even the 3DS, you know, like it has a pedometer built into it, which is a really cool feature that encourages you to, it encourages you to walk around with the system, which is
But not too much though.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's limited to 1,000 steps. I wish you could adjust it so you could adjust how many play coins you could get per step or something like that, so you can make it a little challenging to suit yourself. I actually have a personal trainer walking because I got it for like $5 and it does the same thing. You can like adjust it, and then the little sensor you carry with you will turn green when you walk through your steps for the day.
Nice.
But that I wouldn't recommend that game, by the way. just get Pokemon Heart Gold or 3DS or something.
Awesome. All right, we ran a little long with this topic. I think we can say that we covered it pretty well. I'm sorry for all the comments we got and that I haven't read. If you want, you can always check the thread at Negative World. You're going to have to subscribe, though. And also be warned that the topic didn't say positive for the whole way. there was an argument after a while about the benefits of reading.
it is a message board, after all.
Yeah, and message boards live on arguments, so but I still encourage you to go check it out. The same time, a fourth topic that was supposed to be, you know, the fourth chair's topic, but unfortunately that fourth person had to go to bed, so
that's okay. I mean, we could just do it laid back and try to cover that material too, because it kind of ties in. I wanted to talk about pinball and hopefully just kind of look at how pinball was how it is sort of related to video games and how it's sort of related to the history of video games. That other topic, though, was about the death of arcades and sort of what it would take to bring them back. So, I don't know. Do you guys just want to shoot the breeze about that first and then sort of transition it quickly to pinball and we'll just kind of wrap it up?
Go for it.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't have anything prepared for that topic, but what was your experience with arcades? Did you guys hang out in them when you were kids like I did?
Totally, yeah. Like, I just remember it was such a great thing to get a couple quarters from your mom or something, and just to try to stretch them as far as possible. Like, first you walk around and sort of see which game you can get the most bang for your buck for. Then you put the thing in, and then it's like the stakes are so high because you only have three quarters.
Yeah,
and I love arcades. It was there was like a real sense of like community, like a scummy sort of scumbag community, but also stuff like fighting games and things like that, competitive games. But it was just I just loved the sort of sensation of, you know, in those days, home consoles didn't offer you a similar experience at all. Like, you'd go home and play, like, an Atari, and it would be, like, two boxes moving around, you know, bouncing from side to side. But then you go to the arcade, and it was just, you know, like, something awesome. Like, even just Pac-Man is so awesome. And I still enjoy them even now because it's just concentrated enjoyment. It's like a thrill ride, you know? It just totally engages you, and it's super difficult, and it's super engaging, and then it's just fun, you know? Like, distilled fun for me.
Yeah, yeah. Would you guys say the golden age of arcade gaming was when? I mean, what did it seem? I mean, to me, it seems like when I was a little kid, anytime I'd be in an arcade, there would just be like 1,000 guys who looked like Billy Mitchell, you know, with greasy 80s hair, you know, well, and,
you know,
American flag ties on, you know. Yeah, I mean, it seemed like it was really social in those days. I don't know if it's that I'm just remembering, you know, TV shows and movies and stuff, you know, where there's always seems to be like 200 kids playing 7 video games or whatever, you know. But I seem to recall that, you know, that they were really, really a big deal in the 80s. And it seemed like with the NES, it sort of slid away, and then Street Fighter II came along, and that really reinvigorated everything. And that's what I really remember. I was a teenager when Street Fighter II was out, and we pumped so much money into that.
That's
I probably
exactly
had to go to a weaker college than I wanted to go to because I wasted all the money on Street Fighter II.
Did they have a good Street Fighter cabinet, though?
Yeah, it was pretty good. Yeah, you're right. No regrets.
No regrets.
Hadouken!
Sure you can! I used to skip class all the time in college and just go to the arcade and play Police Trainer and Bust a Move instead of studying like 50% of the time.
Yeah.
So I would say the arcades are actually a negative influence, but still one that I cherish for some reason.
Yeah.
I stayed silent for the most part here, but because I don't really have any arcade experience, really. I grew up in a small French-Canadian town, and there were no arcades, except for once a year. But yeah, but it was like one small crummy tent with like 10 machines. They were like the popular games of the time, so obviously like Mortal Kombat 2 when that came out, and like Street Fighter. But I always found it underwhelming to play it at the arcades because it wouldn't last very long, you know? Someone would kick my ass really, really quick.
Yeah, that was a frustrating thing there. But it was like such a point of honor. I guess maybe because we were just dumb kids with more money than sense. But, you know, it was like, oh man, you know, I'm really good with Blanca and he kicked my ass. I got to switch over to, Ken or Ryu and train that up so I can beat him, you know.
You put your quarter down on the machine real, like, intimidating, like.
Yeah!
Like go piece, you just smash it down there.
I remember a guy doing that to me. Oh, no, that's a boring story. But yeah, you know, kick some guy's ass with Iceman and X-Men versus what the
Actually,
hell?
You know, those fighting games, I feel like there was a real sinister undercurrent going on there a lot of the times. Like, it really wasn't very friendly, you know?
No, it wasn't. It was destructive. It was...
Yeah, no, and it was like all nerds, but they were like angry aggro nerds, and I was like, I'm just a peaceful nerd.
That is true, though, actually, now that you mention it, because I have these good memories of, you know, all these people crowded around the new fighting game, but actually, everyone treated each other like shit.
Forget totally.
Arcade games. Ah, they were bad for us, dude.
Actually, you know, arcades in general, I think they're like a hotbed of gang activity. My Aladdin's Castle was shut down in the mall. It was shut down for gang activity. Those are the only people that were there, and nobody else, like, everyone else was afraid to go in there.
Wow.
Except for me.
Well, I'm glad that we took care of the positive topic before.
Okay, back to the old west.
So, video games encourage violence, gang activity. Oh, and I just want to quickly mention, I was going to go for Atonement for the title of this episode, but Dumb Kids with More Money Than Sense is going to be... Definitely, definitely better title.
Fantastic.
Thanks.
Okay, I'm going to change my screen name to that. Yeah,
it looks like Chris was a rich kid, but I only got like 2 or 3 quarters at one time. I had to squeeze him as hard as possible.
No, I didn't eat lunch. That's what I would do. That was my con. It was like I would eat one of those iced honey buns at lunch for like 25 cents, and that would be my lunch every day for like 6 months, and then I would take the quarters home and play Mortal Kombat with it.
You would just play while the worms consumed you from the inside.
Yeah. So video games contributed to lack of nutrition, gang warfare.
All right, so should we transition to pinball?
Yeah, well before we do that, let's talk about the actual bust, though, of the arcade industry. I mean, it was really sad to see for people who really loved going to arcades. I mean, did you feel this way too, Anand? That, you know, you would go and see your old arcade and it would be like, you know, 10 motorcycle games from, you know, 7 years ago that no one's played, you know, since the, you know, the first Bush administration.
The Sega Harley Davidson game, you mean? You know, like, actually, I think you were totally correct before when the Golden Age was like, you know, when Space Invaders came out and stuff like Pac-Man, video games were huge. Like, you guys probably don't remember this, and even I don't really remember it, even though I'm super old. I'm not that old. But, like, video games were totally, like, mainstream then, like, more than they are now, I believe. And, like, just because everybody played Space Invaders and Pac-Man, things like that. Like, they released an album of video game songs, which I had with Pac-Man Fever. I think it was called Pac-Man Fever.
I remember Pac-Man Fever, yeah.
Yeah.
My dad used to play Galaga. I mean, you know, just pump quarters
into
Galaga all the time, you know. This guy played another game until Wii Sports Bowling, of course.
Yeah, like everybody used to play back then. It was almost like the Wii kind of brought that back in a way. But like then with the home consoles, when like the NES came out, it started dying out a little, I think. And like you were right, Street Fighter brought it back for a while, that competitive scene, like the scumbag scene. And then that faded away also after a while. And then as home consoles got more and more powerful, like there became less and less of a need to go to an arcade to play a game. And you're like, I don't want to pay like a dollar per play. I'll just buy the game for like 20 bucks from a friend of mine or something. You know, so nowadays I think video games, the only place arcades still exist are in places like movie theaters and bowling alleys and stuff like that, you know, and it's not like the most current stuff. They'll just have old machines or whatever.
It seems like if you want to play Aerosmith Revolution X, the movie theater's your place, you know?
Yeah, like exactly, or the Journey game. Or like,
but, I love that game.
I know, it was good. No, it wasn't.
No, that's actually a good point. It's something that I wanted to bring up about pinball, which is that, I mean, I think the key to the death of the arcade industry was that, you know, suddenly those games that we love to play at the arcade, you could get virtually perfect, you know, experience at home. You know, like when I've got like five different copies of Street Fighter II, you know, and all of them are pretty much as good as going and playing at the arcade, wouldn't you say? I mean,
exactly,
you know,
some
or better,
online
some of the
and
new
stuff
ones,
like that
right?
Now, you know,
yeah, exactly. So yeah. I mean, it's almost like can live on at home in a perfect way. But that the one thing though is that pinball, which has this long history related to video games, can't do that. Like unless you're like some rich guy with more money than sense, right?
Yeah, you know. or if you live in Austin or the other place with the Pinball Hall of Fame or whatever.
Yeah, you know, and you can go check it out. I mean, you can't really bring pinball home, or you can't, you know, it's not as accessible as it used to be. And one
it's hard to transport the machines over to your friend's house. Yeah, it's definitely more difficult.
Yeah, I mean, have you guys tried any of, I mean, there were always attempts, even going back to the NES days. Even, I think there were plenty of, like, Atari games that tried to emulate pinball at home. Did you ever play any of those, video pinball or the NES pinball game with Mario in it?
Mario was actually holding up the thing at the bottom, the paddle, and my friend, it was like that was like my friend's first game, and I was like, oh, I feel bad for you, but we used to play it all the time anyway because it was his only game. And it's not bad, it's pretty fun. You have that bonus
but it's not really, it doesn't feel like you're playing pinball when you play that game, does it? I mean, it feels like you're playing some kind of, you know.
There's two schools of video pinball, right? There's the one kind of pinball that's supposed to be exactly like a pinball table with the exact physics of pinball and nothing that can't
be simulation.
Exactly, yeah. And then there's the other kind of video pinball where they just go crazy and just do whatever, things that wouldn't be possible normally. And I kind of prefer the second one.
Yeah.
Like rather than just emulation, because if I'm playing a video game, I want it to feel like a video game. If I'm playing a real pinball table, then that has its own thing and you're never going to really exceed that. Although, you know, some of the simulations are fun.
Like yeah, I was going to say that the thing that's amazed me is that, you know, see, I got into pinball really, really recently. I mean, just this last year, like so 2 or 3 months ago, I came across a photo of a pinball machine here in Austin. And Austin, apparently, I had no idea, has this, can I say the name of the place? I'm not affiliated with it.
Sure, why not?
It's called Pinballs Arcade. It's Pinballs with a Z. So, it's real clever there, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we can use the letter Z like they used the letter X in the 90s, you know? Everything's
extreme, definitely.
Yeah. But, so pinballs, and they've got like 80, you know, I just came across this photo on Flickr, and it said, oh, well, this was taken at Pinballs in Austin, you know? And so here's this photo of all these pinball machines, and I was like, man, that looks cool, you know? I got to check that out. So I went down there, and they have like all these different pinball machines, and I'm not somebody who played a lot of pinball. My experience with pinball was probably similar to anybody else's, which is that they were always, those pinball machines were always there when you were at the arcade, and a lot of times they were more expensive. So like you were saying, you got 3 quarters, you know, you're like, well, I'm going to, you know, plunk 2 quarters in and play the black hole, or am I going to play 3 games
50 cents. It's always 50 cents.
Yeah. But every now and then you'd say, man, I'm going to play some pinball, and you play a little bit. And so that was really all my experience.
And then you lose like 30 seconds later because pinball is really, really difficult.
Yeah. There was a Pinbot machine at a ice cream parlor I used to go to, and I remember plunking money into it, and like all three balls drained without me ever even hitting them. I mean, it was just
that's like so frustrating. You're just like, fuck! You're just kicking the table.
Yeah, why did I ever play pinball?
I know, it's like that was a waste of 50 cents.
Yeah, back to Spy Hunter with me. Yeah.
Spy Hunter was cool.
Yeah.
I don't have a whole lot of experience with actual pinball. You know, like I basically play the ones that are at the theater, like the Lord of the Rings machine or whatever they happen to have. But I did listen to this incredibly in-depth podcast about pinball. What is it called again? Like Retro Gaming Roundup. Hmm. And those guys really know pinball, or at least they know how to explain it to people who don't understand it. But yeah, like there's like this one guy who's got like his own arcade in his basement. And, you know, like he says that pinball is actually really, really popular with his guests. You know, like people don't go for the arcade machines. They see pinball and they want to try it. So like he thinks that the decrease in popularity doesn't have to do with the fact that people don't like pinball. They really do like it. He says that it's more the problem of the operators who they have control over like the how large the lanes are and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like they can change things to make the pinball machine harder.
Just like just like in the arcades, they also have dip switches for that kind of stuff, difficulty.
Yeah, but I guess that in arcades, like they're okay usually with keeping the machine relatively easy, because you know usually it's multiplayer simultaneous. So you know like someone will come in and like kick the other guy off the machine and you know start playing. If we're going by the whole like the winner has a free game thing, but pinball it's like turn by turn, so. And like, if you have this one whiz kid who's gonna hog the machine for you know get a billion points at pinball, then like you're reasoning, well, in the mind of the operators, like they're losing a lot of revenue, so they want to make it really really hard and have like the lanes way too spaced out, you know, like way too large, and make the game incredibly difficult. But that's probably a turn off for most people.
Yeah, you know? They want to minimize the Tommy factor, the pinball wizard factor.
Yeah. No, I got it. Yeah. What I'm curious about is whether that's, I mean, I take the guy at his word. I wonder if that's really true, because every time I see pinball in the wild, not at this arcade, but anytime I just see it out there, no one's ever playing it. And so, I mean, do you really have a problem with people coming and taking over the machine and not letting other people play? Or is it just, you know, pinball is too expensive and kind of hard to, I don't know. Well,
there's like the whole maintenance thing for sure.
There's only a couple of people left that can repair pinball machines and keep them in order. And because pinball machines are all like physical moving parts, it's not like an arcade machine, you know? Like it's very difficult. Like if a bumper is gone, you have to get in there and like replace the rubber band with an equivalent rubber band or something. And there was one podcast called A Life Well Wasted by Robert Ashley, and he has a really good episode on pinball, and he has an interview with the guy who runs the, I think, Pinball Hall of Fame or something, who maintains them. It's just like a labor of love, because it's like financially kind of, you know, irresponsible to try to have like just a pinball place or something like that, unless, you know, you're in the epicenter of pinball, like Austin, I guess. Like, is that place really busy?
Yeah, it's pretty busy. I mean, it tends to be, when you go there, it's all neck-bearded dudes in their 30s, you know, playing it. It's not, you know, it's not really a family place yet. Yeah, it's neck-beard gangs in their 30s is what it's going to turn out to. Yeah, but, you know, it is interesting you talk about maintenance, because you can tell every time you go there, you know, there's like, you know, five pinball machines that you played last time that are off because they need some maintenance, you know, and the ones that weren't working last time have been repaired. So obviously it's much more high maintenance and much more expensive, you know, but I guess the question that I really wanted to ask, though, you guys, you know, it kind of is, do you think modern gamers, like, you know, we're into video games, you know, I feel like I'm sort of discovering that I took pinball for granted. It's like it was always there in the arcades. I did like it. I didn't love it the way that I loved Kid Icarus or something like that, but I did enjoy playing it. And it's been like 10 years since I played pinball, because the arcades aren't around anymore, and so I just don't encounter it like I used to. Do you think modern gamers should have any interest in pinball? I mean, if you want to have a complete diet of, you know, as a modern gamer, you know, someone who plays a little bit of everything and is good at a little bit of everything, do you think pinball should be on that list, or do you think it's kind of irrelevant now?
Well, first, I think we have to ask, should we care what modern gamers think and play? And
think no, I mean, yeah, I'm just saying, if you're thinking to yourself as a gamer, you're
like,
yeah.
I just feel like a lot of what the so-called modern gamer likes is not really,
Call of Duty.
Doesn't really match what I like.
Well, yeah, I don't mean it like that. I just mean us, guys like us, should we say, you know, look at pinball a second time and say, hey, man, maybe I do like pinball. Maybe I should seek out a place and try it again. Or do you think it's, you know, because the deal with the pinball industry is that it has actually gone bust alongside with the arcade industry. If you look in the 90s, they were really booming. Williams was still making pinball machines.
Right, yeah.
Hollywood was making pinball machines. There were, you know, Gottlieb was still out there, Premier and Stern. And now Stern is the only one left. You know, when they died, basically everybody switched to making slot machines. And I guess the question is, you know, as we're looking at that, are we staring at the kind of the end of the pinball era? And as gamers, are we okay with that, you know?
Well, you know, like, pinball machines often shared the space in arcades with video game machines, but I think they were always something different. Like, I don't really conflate the two in my head, you know? And I do think people these days would appreciate them if they could get them, but I don't think, like, I just don't think it's a profitable or financially, like, reasonable thing that, like, the pinball industry is probably never going to come back again, so it'll always be something kind of anachronistic, which is fun, you know, like drinking sarsaparilla or something. But I enjoy it, and I always will probably enjoy it, but it'll just get less and less, you know, in people's memory until it just disappears, and they just play it on, like, the Williams collection and stuff like that. But I think it's definitely something cool, like a piece of gaming history, like game history that, you know, it's neat and people would enjoy it, but I don't think it'll ever really come back, except for in video form or something.
Yeah, I guess that pinball machines are not very attractive to operators because of all the maintenance. And also, like, again, on that podcast, Retro Gaming Roundup, like, the argument was that it also takes the space of two arcade machines.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so, like, you could make, like, twice as much as money, you know, if you had, like, two arcade cabinets instead of one pinball table.
And going way back, I mean, arcade cabinets were always more popular anyway, you know. Like, if you look at all those old, like, Midway was a division of Bally, you know, they were producing, it was like pinball companies were making these arcade machines. So if there was, you know, if arcade machines kind of replaced video or replaced pinball, it was the pinball machines that, you know, pinball companies that did it, you know.
I think, you know, like, pinball is like, it should be like opera. It should be funded by the government because otherwise there's no way it can survive, you know, because people are never, it's never going to be financially like, you know, good to have a, like a pinball machine, but maybe if the government subsidizes it, like they do opera and the theater and things like that, then maybe it can still survive in some form. Otherwise it'll be like, you only get to play it at the Western festivals.
So you guys definitely feel like pinball's basically anachronistic and gone then, you know. Because the thing that I was noticing playing it the last few months is that I was really surprised by the deep rule sets of a lot of these pinball tables. Like,
oh, absolutely. Yeah, and like definitely. Most people don't understand how to play pinball.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
And that's the hardest thing. But the thing that I realized is that, you know, I went to this place, played a couple rounds, realized that I sucked at pinball. And I was like, man, I'm kind of interested in this. So I went and got the Williams collection for the 360 and started playing.
Cool, yeah.
It's awesome, man. It's one of my favorite games. Definitely for a budget game, I think everybody should kind of try to track that down because...
And you can really dig in and get the rules for each table
exactly.
and stuff like that.
Yeah, just that alone, like suddenly I find myself going back there and playing the tables I know from the Williams collection because I know how they're played, you know? And I wonder if there could be a synergy, you know, if people played a game, you know, like there's also all those downloadable games. I haven't tried it. Have you? I know you got a PS3, Guillaume. Have you ever tried any of the Zen Pinball or?
Yeah, it's by the same company that made the
Pinball on the 360. Whatever it's called.
Pinball Effects, right?
Yeah, Pinball Effects.
Pinball Effects, yeah. And, it's quite good. It's the same tables. Some of the same tables as Pinball Effects, I think, but a couple of original ones. And until Pinball Effects 2 came out, Zen Pinball was considered, like, the superior option. But I think that Pinball Effects 2 is considered better now. I think it's got sharper graphics or something like that.
And it's quite good.
And it's got... also, like Marvel Pinball is by the same company.
Right.
And it's
that's a good example of what Anand was talking about with the, you know, a game that where it's not trying to simulate actual pinball. It's sort of trying to do something different. So you got, you know, Dr. Octopus picking up your ball and all that kind of stuff.
Does that actually happen in that game? It has stuff that can occur on a normal pinball table?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you've got like the. you know, like Wolverine's claw smashing out of the board, and you know, the ball rolling off of like two of his, you know, like his claws are forming lane or something.
Yeah.
No, it's really, really impossible, but it's really, really cool.
That just made me wonder. You know, since those things are available, and especially things like the Williams collection, you know, do you think that there could ever be a synergy again where, you know, because pinball was, you know, really the beginning of the video game industry, you know, was built around some of the things that pinball was already doing, right? And I wonder if there's a way in which video games would give back to pinball in a way by making those deep rule sets, for instance, of a game like Funhouse, like accessible to people like me who wouldn't have been able to figure it out on his own at the actual table.
Well,
you know?
maybe that's kind of Zen Pinball form. That sort of model is like where pinball will live on. You know, like downloadable tables, and then people could design original tables for that, and you could just release them, you know, piece by piece. And maybe that's the kind of future of pinball, and kind of like a niche, but like a profitable niche, maybe.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that. I know you guys miss the physicality, you know, the physical tables, but I basically, like, I know pinball from video games, and I'm fine with that. You know, I always liked Pokemon pinball.
Yeah,
I didn't even like Pokemon. When I got, like, a Game Boy Color, I never had played any of the Pokemon games, but I saw Pokemon pinball. I was like, wow, I need that.
Yeah, the Metroid.
And it was awesome. Metroid also.
Nintendo has dabbled a lot. It had Kirby Pinball Land. They had two Pokemon pinballs, Metroid Pinball from Fuse Games, Mario Pinball from Fuse Games, and the new Pinball Pulse on DSiWare, which is really good, the Ancient's Curse or the Ancient's Beckon or something. And so,
yeah, and I play those regularly.
And they're all good, yeah, except for Mario Pinball is supposed to be bad, but I never played it, so I don't know.
Yeah, I avoided it.
But actually, the demo was pretty fun, but the reviews kind of sold me off the game, but I'm thinking I might try to track it down, because Fuse Games, who... Nintendo like subcontracts them to do their pinball stuff, seemingly. You know, the other games are pretty good, Metroid Prime Pinball and Pinball Pulse on DSiWare, so it might be worth going back to check it out.
Yeah, but you've got a good point, Chris. You know, I've played the Williams collection, and if I saw Funhouse, you know, in real life or Taxi or whatever, I would know how to play them, so I would be more likely to go to them and you know, start playing. But I don't know. I don't think that those games sold enough to actually, you know, make a difference.
Well, I definitely don't think the Williams collection is going to do it. I just wonder if, you know, with downloadable content and stuff like that. Like, you know, let's say the cafe has... See, I mean, I almost feel like Williams or those guys making the Pinball Hall of Fame could break the game into individual tables that they could sell via, you know, whatever, the cafe market or whatever it's going to be, you know. We wear on the cafe, and then suddenly, you know, you would have access to, you know, you could pick and choose which tables you wanted to play. And I don't know. I mean, I could imagine that. I mean, I don't know. I don't foresee a rebirth of pinball, but I definitely think, I don't know. I just don't like the idea of us leaving it behind. It's to me, pinball is like the analog older brother to video games.
Definitely to arcade games.
Yeah,
like
definitely.
I like going for high scores on pinball machines way more than I do like old arcade games.
Yeah.
Personally.
Don't you have like the world record on Pac-Man Championship Edition or something?
No, not close. And only on PSN, which is like PSN. the little kids.
That's the
table
kiddie pool. You know, like you were saying, it is sad that pinballs, you know, machines aren't around anymore. It's totally sad that arcade machines and arcades aren't around anymore. Yeah. I think it's totally sad because there was a whole sense of community, but even more than that, the types of games that were there, the kind of quick action, quick fun games, they kind of disappeared for a while. And these days with the downloadable scene and leaderboards and online leaderboards and things, and the Wii even, I think the Wii did a pretty good job of bringing that kind of quick fun back. They're kind of making a return, and I really miss that kind of stuff. Like, I don't want to play all like 40-hour epics with like 1-hour cutscenes. I think that stuff's boring as hell. Yeah. So as long as the arcade aesthetic is still preserved in some form, I'm pretty okay with it. And, you know,
I think I could live with that, too. I just think it's neat. You know, main thing I would do, like, to encourage the listeners, if you're intrigued by it, try something like the Williams Collection. Or you know, if you see a pinball table, pop a quarter in and see if you like it, you know.
Yeah, or there's a Bally Collection also.
Collection yet. Nah, I hope they put one out because it would be great. They've got a
Gutley.
That's what it is. That's what
that one's good. That one's okay, but I think that one's more for people who already like pinball. You know, it's the tables are a little bit more esoteric, let's say.
The Williams Collection is coming to 3DS, I think.
Yeah,
I think it is also
Ocarina of Time or something, wasn't it? Or
It'll be interesting to see how they handle the two screens on that, or the 3D even.
Yeah, I heard somewhere, I read a preview that said that it really looks kind of you're kind of at a weird angle because they had to kind of crush it, so you're looking.
And the resolution is a lot lower than like the 360 version too, or even the Wii probably, you know.
Yeah, but those tables are all cool, and it's got the ones that were in the 360 version. So if you've got the Wii version of the Williams Pinball Collection, and you got a 3DS, I mean, it adds quite a few new tables, and there's some of the best ones too. So
should we spill the biggest secret about pinball, like the greatest tip for playing pinballs, which I just learned like a couple months ago, and I realized why I had lost so rapidly for my whole life is that you should never. No, because they don't get that nasty tilt thing in it anymore. No, like you should never use both flippers at the same time, right?
Yep.
That's like
actually that's actually not an advanced technique. Yeah, like apparently everyone thing, knows right? that.
Or, I never knew. But it's like a huge.
Well, while we're on that topic, I just want to mention if people want to learn how to play pinball, there's like the Internet Pinball Database.
Yeah.
It's ipdb.org. It's like a page straight out of the early 90s.
Yeah.
And but there's like two tabs that you can check out. There's like playing skills and glossary. And those are invaluable if you want to learn. And I learned about that page from, again, like that podcast I talked about, the Retro Gaming Roundup.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another resource that I would direct people to because like the... I only listened to the early, you know, the first couple of episodes of that podcast because they're like 3-4 hours long, but like the guy does go in depth and you learn a ton of stuff and like you know like Chris you were talking about knowing the rule set and everything, but like the guy will tell you how you're supposed to be able to read the table, you know, like how you study it first before you start playing it, and then you try it and then you study it again, and I can't obviously go in depth as much as the guy did because he knows way more than I do, and also because he had 4 hours to do it. But I definitely encourage people to just check that at least, like you know, the first couple of episodes if they're interested.
You know, like have you guys ever played pinball? Speaking of pinball, speak of the devil, I'm actually staring at the Extreme Pinball gold box for the PC, which is in front of my computer, which is one of the first Epic games of all time before they did Unreal and Jazz Jackrabbit and all that stuff, which I used to play the hell out of. We installed on our computer labs in school, and we used to play it like during lessons and stuff. But did you guys ever play Pinball Construction Set on the Commodore 64? Probably not.
No,
I didn't.
I've seen it, but I've never played it.
Yeah, it was cool because you can make your own tables, and it really made you think about like pinball design. It's kind of like a lost art, you know, because not that many people actually design tables anymore. So, but on another topic, you know, back to arcades. The way arcades exist now, they can't offer the same experiences as the home, so they have to offer unique, like weird peripherals and stuff like that. You know, that's the way they still exist in Japan, where they do actually exist. And you know, Japan was kind of the home of the arcade scene for a long time, and they used to be here also. But nowadays, most of the new machines don't come over. But they still exist in Japan for unique things like trading card games, where you scan real cards in or something, or things with persistent kind of like card-based things, or like a rhythm game or para-para game or dancing game or something. Like those kind of games still exist in arcades, and maybe that's the only way arcades can still exist and offer something unique is to have those kind of experiences. Because even in Japan, like the normal arcade games are pretty much gone now. Like Sega doesn't make that many anymore. Most of the market is kind of like patchy slot, like pachinko and slot machines and stuff like that. That stuff is huge and really profitable. And like, you know, Sammy who owns Sega, they're like, you know, Sega stopped making, you know, basically they want to make less real games and more pachinko machines and things like that because it's just so much more profitable in Japan.
But the market in Japan is so much more accepting of these weird arcade ideas, you know? I don't think that you could have an appending the T-table video game, arcade game in North America, but they somehow do in Japan.
You mean
walk the dog on the moon game? Or
oh, yeah.
No, but like the one I'm thinking about, like I only heard of it on a podcast, but like the whole point of the game is like you're watching like a scenario unfold, like you're listening to like the you're sitting at dinner and like there's like the dad talking about something, and at some point he says something that's your cue that you should just like flip the table, and you've got an actual, you know, like
play that
like
game.
A plank or a board,
it's like a Miyamoto simulator.
You know, Yeah, and you have like to flip it up, you know, and as you know, at the right moment and as hard as you can.
Well,
and that's the game.
First of all, that sounds awesome. And yeah. Second of all, like, I don't think the exact concepts would always, you know, translate, like the arcade game in Japan that's basically about sticking your finger into people's asses. like there's just a hole and you stick your finger in it.
I'm googling that now.
It's like Concho or something like that.
Yeah, you can choose like if it's like a boss or something. Like you've got different people that you can choose to stick your finger in your.
I don't know how it works. Maybe there's like multiple holes for like different orifices or something. Like I don't know. So that kind of thing probably wouldn't translate. But you know, but even here, like the arcade industry towards the end before it crashed was mostly like the kind of entertainment machines that you know you couldn't do in the home, like stuff like Afterburner and things like that.
Where Pro Skater.
Yeah, like where you're in a cockpit or something like that, and it rotates.
Yeah, there were
around.
A lot of those games. I mean, they're so still out there. If you go to arcades now, it's all these old, you know, late 90s games where you sit in a cockpit and run away from a Tyrannosaurus or something.
It's just those and then Galaga and Pac-Man and maybe Hydro Thunder or something.
Yeah, the game's everywhere.
Or maybe like Arctic Thunder, the snow version of that where it blasts cold air at you from the machine.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. But the Monster Truck Thunder thing wasn't that fun. Anyway, but yeah, like... So those kind of things, I think, like even in like another place that arcade games still existed is in places like Dave and Buster's. I don't know if it's a national chain, but these kind of like adult places where they have drinks and they have food and you can play like nostalgic games and they have some recent stuff also. And also things like Chuck E. Cheese, which I don't know if that's, I think that's a national chain, right? It used to be Showbiz Pizza or something. And I actually took my nephew to one. I hadn't been in like 10 years. And I was like, this is pretty awesome because like I haven't played these arcade games in so long. They had the Mario Kart arcade game. Mario Kart GP, which has two versions by Namco that were never released for the home. That was pretty interesting. And they had like a rotating cockpit with crimson skies and all this kind of stuff. Like most of the other stuff, even in Chuck E. Cheese, most of the real arcade games were gone. It was like Metal Slug and that was it. And the rest
it's been a long time since I've been in a Chuck E. Cheese, but you know, like 7 or 8 years ago, I think my wife and I were at one and it was, they didn't really have many arcade games at all at that time.
Oh my
God. They brought them back or...
Well, no, they just had a handful, but they had some pretty cool, like, weird rarities. But it's the weirdest thing. Like, the biggest thing at these arcades is now, it's a machine where you drop money in, and then you get tickets. Like, there's some kind of mechanism, and basically you drop a token in, and then there's some, like, light that goes around, like a virtual roulette wheel, and then it spits out, like, two tickets. And you're like, yay, I got two tickets for my quarter.
Now just cut the skee ball out of skee ball, basically.
I know. Basically, it's just like cutting out the middleman, but it's so stupid. Like, who would ever do that? Like, here's my money, give me tickets so I can buy something that's worth much less money. I mean, it's just insane, but the kids are crazy about this stuff, you know?
Yeah. Anyway. Those kids are all going to grow up and move to Vegas and have gambling habits. I mean,
they're just going to grow up twisted from playing COD online and kind of language you hear, things like that. It's just
so we mentioned a few already, but like, what would you guys consider like the best video game pinball that you've played?
The best ever? The one that I'm hooked on right now is called Tales of the Arabian Nights. It's on the Williams Pinball Collection and. That game is just freaking fun. You know, like, I really like it. So that's really good. It's kind of definitely 90s era pinball where you've got a big toy up at the top that you're trying to hit and you got ramps going everywhere. That one's really fun.
I don't think that one is in the Wii collection.
I don't think it's in the Wii version, no. The Wii version doesn't have... let's see, it doesn't have Medieval Madness, which is another great one. It doesn't have Arabian Nights, and it doesn't have No Good Gophers. And those are all great tables. No, that's a good one, though. It's funny.
That's a great
name. Yeah, it sounds good, yeah.
It's like Caddyshack, the pinball game, basically.
I was thinking it was like Whack-A-Mole with pinballs.
Yeah, it's a good one. But yeah, that's one of my favorites right now. It's hard to say because there's different, you know, there's different strategies on different pinball games, and I like different ones for different reasons. Like, I like Tales of the Arabian Nights because it's just so complex and so weird, you know, and it's so... I don't know if I'd say deep, but it's just fun, you know? It's like,
cool when they have an interesting theme or something like that, because that's a big part of pinball, right, is the theme of the table?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in Medieval Madness is the same kind of thing. Have you guys played that one?
Yeah, it's on the collection, right?
No.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that one is hilarious. It's got, like, Tina Fey's doing voices on it, and you have to rescue the slutty damsels in distress and all sorts of... drunk guy, you're knocking his castle down. It's really funny. I mean, it's a really good game.
Pinball is pretty crass in general, usually. I mean, yeah, like, but there's usually like women in bikinis and like fast cars, and like that's the kind of audience pinball goes for, you know, which is awesome. It's just like, you know.
Well, it's weird. Pinball was illegal for years. Did you guys know that? Like, we're considered
what?
Gambling machines. Yeah, Mayor LaGuardia in New York in particular, like back in the 30s. Yeah, no, well, people were selling back. They were used as gambling machines, those early ones, and that they did actually people would collect replays and then cash those replays in. Yeah, I know it sounds crazy, but you'd have like 20 replays, and then you go get like all the quarters, you know, from that, you know, and it was like a gambling machine.
So there was like a prohibition where they're like pinball.
Yeah, prohibition on pinball from the 30s to actually to like 1972 or something. Like it was that late.
Funny.
Yeah, so it was like all the major cities, like Chicago and New York and Los Angeles, like they passed a ban. So, and that's why, you know, like you mentioned Tommy earlier, that's one of the things that we don't get, you know, is that a lot of those old 50s and 60s movies will have pinball machines in them, and they're always being played by like these rebellious figures. So you got like Marlon Brando in The Wild One playing pinball like a badass, and you're just like, dude's playing pinball, why is that? But it's because it was illegal and it was associated with gambling and it was tough and it was rebellious. And that's why, like in Tommy, you know, he's real good at pinball. There's like a mystique to that. Maybe we've lost today that we don't get. You know, it's like pinball doesn't seem tough to us, but back then it was defying the law.
Well, that's like everything, right? Like once upon a time, like, you know, Elvis music was tough.
Yeah.
And like, you know, maybe even Neil Sedaka was tough or something.
Yeah.
these days you have like grind smash core, and it's just like, you know, so like it's just the way that society goes. Like things that were rebellious and like that become antiquated over time. It's like, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess we've pretty much decided pinball's dead. Well, that's not the conclusion I wanted to come to, but
sorry to bring
you
down.
Got there. Yeah.
But we all like pinball in some form, I guess.
Yeah.
Also, it's kind of a, you know, a mandate of this podcast to always end in the
downward. On a sour note.
Yeah. You know what would save pinball?
What's that?
If the Project Cafe controller was a pinball machine.
If it had,
I'm just saying, some of them have 6-inch screens. So,
you know,
and they've got buttons.
That's the cool thing about the Xbox 360 controller with the pinball collection, because the triggers really feel kind of like flippers. I mean, they don't have that kind of kickback, but they feel a little bit like flippers, and it's kind of cool. Like on the GameCube, on the Wii rather, it's kind of a weird, the control method they had to use, right?
Yeah, and the nudge controls are pretty strange. That's one. I mean, I'm a big booster of motion gaming, and I prefer that kind of thing. But I don't know about the nudge controls on the Wii version. They're just a little. They're hard to get to work. You know, maybe it's like more like real pinball where it's hard as hell to nudge. But
well, that's
actually I found that in the Wii collection, it was a little bit too easy to nudge the table without really wanting
yeah,
to.
Yeah, nudging all the time. You just get too into the action. Yeah, like on the Metroid Prime pinball, the nudging was on the touchscreen, right? Which is kind of unfortunate because I wish it was just on the buttons and shoulder buttons like it was on Pokemon pinball.
I thought it worked well personally.
But you have to move your finger all the way to the middle, you know, to do it. Like in Pokemon pinball, you could just do it with your hands in the same place and set it up so up is to nudge it up and down is to nudge it down and the shoulder buttons are to nudge it left and right, you know.
Yeah, but sometimes you want the shoulder buttons to be the triggers.
The flippers.
Right?
Well,
the flippers.
You know, like with Nintendo's handhelds, I pretty much baby my shoulder buttons and use them as little as possible because ever since the DS Lite, like they just stop working after a while. So either, like for the first year, I just jam on the shoulder buttons as much as possible and try to get it to fail within that time so I can get it fixed. And then after that, I just pretty much lay off forever. Like I'm really paranoid about that with the 3DS, you know?
Well, that's your issue.
It's happened to like three systems.
I just was tired of the hand cramps of always having to use those buttons because it's not the most comfortable thing.
It's not comfortable. The 3DS buttons are actually a lot more comfortable.
Are they? Good. I need
they are.
You know,
yeah,
I'll get
even though they're small. Yeah, get one. What's up?
Waiting for Kid Icarus.
Waiting for Kid Icarus pinball in 3D on the 3DS?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that pinball is the killer app for me. Forget Ocarina of Time. It's pinball. It's Funhouse, man.
Why is a remake a killer app anyway? I don't understand the internet. I don't understand people. Like, everyone's like frothing for Ocarina of Time again, you know? It's kind of.
I think that's a topic for another time, but I agree. It's kind of weird.
Although,
hey, it looks better than ever.
Definitely, it looks better, and actually my problems with Ocarina of Time are mostly mechanical, and I think that they're fixing that stuff, like the movement and stuff like that, and the horrible graphics and things like that, so.
So what you're saying is day one?
Day one, exactly. I have to see those new shops rendered in 3D. I have to see that town.
Wow. Okay. Well, I think that we've probably exhausted the topic if we're now talking about Ocarina of Time.
We've exhausted
it. There's never been a pinball table, though. Ocarina of Time table.
Well, actually, that's one more comment I wanted to make, is that you were saying favorite pinball tables. I used to mostly gravitate, like a little kid does, to like licensed, you know, pinball tables, which are often some of the best.
Well, that's everyone. Yeah. You go for what you know.
Those are some of the best tables, and that's the kind of thing that you're going to have to go to like black market stuff to like play these days, because it's not going to be on those collections. Some of the best ones, you know, are like Adam's Family. And
yeah, Adam's
like
Family.
Licensed.
Yeah.
And so you'll probably have to, you know, go underground to like play those, get your main machine or something.
But I kind of wonder about that. Do you think they could strike a deal if they were selling them one at a time, like say
it's like,
on
it's
Xbox
like potentially
Live or
possible.
Something?
Yeah, it's potentially possible, but it'll never happen for the vast majority of them. Just like licensed arcade games like Superman and stuff like that, it's just not going to happen.
All right. Well, personally, if we're going to answer my own question, Marvel Pinball, definitely it's really up there as far as video game or pinball goes. It's got like excellent leaderboards. You always see the person ahead of you, you know, their points and how many points you have to get to pass him.
Yeah.
And the tables themselves are pretty damn good. Like there's four of them, you know, Iron Man, Wolverine, Blade for some reason.
I think some new ones just came out, right? Not that you'd know because PSN, but
yeah, I'm waiting for PSN to come back up. But yeah, and they're quite good. Yep. They're not really stuff that's possible in actual pinball, but the physics are good. There's no complaints there.
Yeah, that's the thing I was noticing in the videos. Like, the physics on those looked actually pretty amazing, like maybe even better than the Williams collection.
The one unfortunate thing, the Spider-Man table is broken because it's like, I don't know if like I was especially lucky that night or something, but I got like 20 times more points than the next person on my leaderboards. And I think I just found a trick where basically if you fought like Dr. Octopus or whatever, and then like even when you failed, like you wouldn't lose a ball.
Yeah.
And like the balance is out of whack, and I kept playing and playing like for almost an hour, and that it kind of got boring.
Broken? That sounds awesome. Something for nothing, man. Count your blessings.
You can just kick your PS3, right? No, but speaking of the being broken, like my most cherished memory with pinball was that our whole family was on vacation. We were staying in a Holiday Inn, and they had a pinball machine, and we put a quarter in, we played, and then it just kept spitting more balls on, letting us play more. And like my brother was like, "Oh, the machine's gone haywire." And I was like, haywire? What does that mean? And basically, the long story short, I just spent like hours just sitting in that lobby playing the pinball machine. I was like, just kind of like looking around to see if anyone was watching me or something. It was like the greatest moment of my life.
Yeah, that guy's like, man, I'm making a lot of money off of that kid.
And yeah. Like, joke's on you.
Do you remember what table it was?
Hell no.
Okay.
I was like 5 years old or something.
Oh, okay,
I think that same Holiday Inn also had a mini golf course, which was play as much as you want, so it had some competition.
We actually got like a shout out from the guys at TVN Lust, Lust.net, Lust as in L-U-S-T. like they've got their own podcast, and it would be pretty cool if you checked it out. I started listening to it recently, and it's really, really good. It's they talk about all of the platforms, you know, like Xbox and PS3 and Wii, and they're one of the rare multi-platform podcasts where when they discuss the Wii, I don't get pissed off. So definitely, I don't know if it's just my bias, because like Craig seems to have pretty much the same tastes, or at least we agree on a lot of the same things. But Yeah, I recommend listening to it. And like, he's a native English speaker, so he's got like he's fluent in English, which is something we'll never have on this podcast.
Hey, you know, your smooth French accent is what's eventually going to bring, you know, throngs of female viewers to this female listeners to this podcast. So.
Yeah.
Well, I've been told the same thing about actual females in real life, and that hasn't really worked in my favor.
Yeah. No, but I mean, you live in Canada. It's not going to work in Canada. It's not going to work in France either. Like, you
got
to
come down here,
okay.
Where there's no French
yeah,
people.
Point.
Yeah,
yeah, you'd be suave,
good point,
man.
Good point. All right. So yeah, that was my quick shout out to TVN Lust. Check it out. It's tvnlust.net, and they've also got their podcast on iTunes. And you know, I'm giving them a shout out because they plugged the podcast, the Negative World podcast, on their Twitter. And I would do the same on my Twitter, but I've got like 16 followers, and they've got like a couple of hundred. So definitely this soapbox is a little bit higher. So thanks for the extra attention. I'm pretty sure we got a couple more downloads thanks to you guys. And I know you're listening to this. So yeah, thanks, Craig and Chris. Yeah, Rebanek on the Negative World.
Okay.
Programs.
Also, we should give a shout out to Renjaku, who couldn't be here with us today. Our hearts go out to him.
But yeah, no, we had some technical problems before recording this podcast, unfortunately. So yeah, okay. So please check us out on the Negative World boards. It's negativeworld.org. And if you hate fun and don't want to join the boards, you can just like our page on Facebook. Just look for the page Negative World. And you can also get some updates on Twitter. It's negative_world. And you can also follow me personally on Twitter, although I don't know why you would. It's Pandarius Rex, PandareusRex. And I had to put the Rex there because apparently Pandarius was taken, eliminating the whole reason why I stuck with that name in the first place.
And nobody would take it?
Yeah. And yeah, so that concludes our podcast. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Thanks for putting up with our technical bullshit.
Yeah.
It's all right. I, you know, like, there's some headaches associated with having to do this over Skype, but it's not like I could put, I could do this podcast by myself. So yeah, I want to thank the listeners for listening to this. Otherwise, there would be really no point in doing this. So I really appreciate it. See you next time.
Okay, see you.
Later.
By the way, listeners, you heard correctly. We have girls on Negative World. Actually, more correctly, we have girl on Negative World.
Yeah.
Well, there's like a fifth. Well, maybe I shouldn't give numbers. Yeah. But yeah, we've got like a few who are registered, but only really one person who's active.
That should be your slogan. Come to Negative World. Talk to girl.
Yeah. it's always ladies' night. It's always lady night at Negative World.
Actually, my brother has also a picture of himself shaking hands with George W. Bush. I guess he got around.
Yeah.
My wife has a picture of her shaking hands with George W. Bush.
Whoa.
Yeah, wonderful.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay.
My mother has a copy of that. We don't have it in the house.
Okay. You don't want it to haunt your house?
No,
the specter of George W. Bush?
No, thanks. Please, no.
You'll go to war with your neighbors?
You know what? My brother used to play video games, so I'm going to jump to the conclusion that playing video games gets you to meet presidents.
So if it gets you to meet George W. Bush, then stop playing video games, everybody. Yeah.
Video game crash.
Sorry to disrupt this positive topic, but...
Just yeah, yeah.
There was like a Western festival in the neighboring town.
Western festival?
It sounds like it's the Mars or something.
It's actually a pretty big deal. Story. Like it's one of like the second biggest Western festival in North America.
What is a Western festival? Is it like all people dressed up in chaps and stuff going around?
Is it like one of only two Western festivals in North America?
No, I live in Texas. I'll eat that up. That's cool, man. That's a...
Hey, there's like, I don't know, there's like 500 people who go there per year, and like a lot of them come from the U.S., so.
Pretty sweet.
It's the second biggest Western festival, and it's got 500 people there?
500,000.
Oh, 500,000.
Okay. I'm sorry. Sorry. Maybe I mispronounced. Yeah.
It's like...
Now.
Anyway, you pretty much nailed it. It's people in spurs and like beer holsters, basically. You can drink in the streets. That's a big part of it.